Commissioners and the Office of the Auditor General. In that way, we are opening our meeting. I'm going to allow the Deputy Minister to give measured input as leader of the team of the department. Thereafter, we'll get a presentation by the Office of the Auditor General. Members will then interact with that, after which we'll get a report or a presentation by the department on the annual performance of the department. I must indicate at the outset that I'm going to dash out in the course of the meeting to attend a meeting called at the instance of the Speaker of Parliament. Honourable Gina, the whip of the committee, will proceed with the meeting, and I will rejoin this meeting hopefully later on. Yeah, can I give the opportunity to the business?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from the Auditor General, and officials from the department. Well, Chairperson, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity, for giving the department an opportunity to present its annual report for the year ending 31st March 2012. Chairperson, you would know that our mandate in the main is to respond directly to government's program of action, particularly the outcome 5. And to this end, I must indicate that we have made tremendous strides in delivering what we have set ourselves for the year. Sitting here, at least as at the 31st of March 2012, the department has achieved 60% of its planned targets, with of course 40% in the process of being achieved, and I am certain that in the not so distant future we'll be reporting as to how we have been able to achieve the rest of the 40% target that we set ourselves for. The annual report, Chairperson, presented by the Director General, who will give a reflection on the performance of the department for the year. I got with those short remarks. I should really thank the Portfolio Committee, because it's quite important that we do this from time to time. We give an account of the work that we do as a department and whether or not we are meeting the set target. They will, of course, take the committee through the preset objectives as required and requested by the committee, and at a point when the department has to present the annual report, the Director General, of course, together with this team, will then take the committee through. Thank you very much, Chair.
Welcome. Thank you very much for the input. Can we lend this opportunity to the Office of the Auditor General?
Good morning, Chair, and thank you. Good morning, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, colleagues from the Department. Chair, we have completed our audit processes. The report of the Department, the annual report of the Department, was tabled in Parliament at the end of September. And we are here to present to the Portfolio Committee the audit outcomes of the higher education portfolio that includes the outcomes of the department, of the public entities under the department, including the universities and the ICT colleges. Just as an introduction, if you'll allow me to introduce my team, I've got there Joshua Baganzi. Joshua Baganzi is the acting senior manager for the portfolio of higher education. the senior manager is on maternity leave, and here for the manager responsible for some of the features within the education department, she's here for exposure. We've got a number of them, there's a number of students within the higher education portfolio. Joshua will take us through the presentation, Chair, but just before Joshua takes us through the presentation, I would just like to highlight, Chair, that for a number of years in the past, the Auditor General has established a deeper approach in analyzing the behavior required by the departments and the entities that could change the audit outcomes of the, in the public sector and sustain good practices within the public sector. And I believe this is in line with the Auditor General's reputation promise to enhance accountability in the public sector. And through this, Chair, we identified a number of focus areas that we believe are deterring achievement of clean audit outcomes. And we believe that if we focus on these specific focus areas and correct deficiencies that are identified through the audit, we are likely to achieve the clean audit, because these are the highest risk within the public sector. And these focus areas are supply chain management, human resource management, information systems, service delivery, and quality and credibility of information, which is financial and performance information, and compliance with rules and regulations. Over and above these focus areas, Chair, we also focus on oversight and governance structures, and this is with regard to risk assessment, risk management, internal audit effectiveness, and effectiveness of audit committees. Chair, overall within the education portfolio, we have sort of a slight increase in or a regression with regard to supply chain management. Entities are within the portfolio are addressing supply chain issues, but there is a slow reaction in addressing these issues, which indicates that there's intervention that is required to address the issues here. In IT control specifically, we will comment on that, and specifically with regard to higher education, we need some improvement with regard to systems that support the non-financial information so that we can then make sure that we are able to monitor, to correct, and to report on credible information with regard to this area. And all this will be highlighted through the presentation, and Joshua will zoom into the outcomes of each and every entity within the department. We will not focus deeply on the universities and entities. We will give an overview. You recall, Chair, that for the first time in 2011, the Auditor General got involved in the audits of the universities and the entities, but this involvement was very limited. What we did, we made sure that the auditors of the FET colleges and the universities comply with the audit requirements of the Section 4.3 entities as defined in the Public Audit Act, and report on predetermined objectives and compliance with rules and regulations. However, there were a number of challenges that we experienced. With regard to the universities, there is no regulation or legislative requirements that require the universities to report on predetermined objectives. In terms of the regulations drawn up by the department, the universities are required, or council of the universities is required, they are required to report on, to do a self-assessment of the performance of the university. There is no guideline in terms of how it must be done, or a framework. So every university reports the way they deem fit. For an example, one university's performance report will be a detailed 30-page report, and another university will be a small paragraph just indicating that the university achieved its objectives, or council is satisfied with the performance of the university. With regard to compliance with rules and regulations, We focus on three areas. We focus on supply chain. However, universities are not regulated on supply chain, so we focus on their policies and best practice, and as a result, the findings on supply chain were limited to the management report and not reported in the audit report. We also focus on human resource, and the same principle applies because there's no regulation governing human resources in the universities, so we focus on policies and procedures, and the findings, if anywhere, reported in the management report. We then focus on the financial requirements as per the Higher Education Act, and these findings were then reported in the audit report if there were any findings. With regard to the FET colleges, there is absolutely no requirement for them to report, not even in the regulation, so they do not report on performance information. We therefore did not audit performance information for the FET colleges. Legislation is required to force the or to request the FET colleges to report on performance information, and I believe that regulations for the universities is underway to govern the reporting of the performance information. So it will not be in the 2012 financial year, hopefully in the 2013 financial year, we will see a detailed report and audit process for the universities. And with that, Chair, I would like to hand over to Joshua to take us through the detailed presentation.
Thanks very much, Macy, for the introduction. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My role here today is to give you an overview of audit outcome for the year 2011-2012 of the Department of Higher Education together with its 26 entities. I'll first start off with a reputation promise. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as a Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. Before I commence with my presentation of the outcomes in the Department of Education and Training portfolio, I think I'll just give you an overview of the entire outcomes. Generally, within the DHP portfolio, there were only four entities that were qualified. One entity was given a disclaimer opinion, and the rest of the 21 entities got unqualified opinions, financial statements. So just follow me through the slides, you'll see those outcomes in detail. This is just a table of contents, page 3. Then I'll commence with the what outcome of the Department of Higher Education and Training. For the year 2011-2012, the department received unqualified opinion with findings on the financial statement. It's the same opinion that it got in the prior 2010-2011. There was a significant improvement when it comes to the opinion for pre-term objective for the department. In the prior, it got an adverse opinion, and this year, due to the intervention that the department put through, they got a qualification. The qualification was basically due to reasons that were including the annual performance report, not being supported by sufficient appropriate evidence. That's why they qualified on pre-termed objective. But there was a significant improvement in the pre-termed objective in this current year. There was also findings under on compliance in the department. The non-compliance was...
Sorry, Chairperson. Chairperson. I don't want to interrupt. I want to be sure I have the correct document because I see under DHET where there is a green arrow. For me, it's a yellow one. Do I have an old document? It's not the same. We have wrong document.
Maybe a bit unimproved as the original document of the AG. Let's check on that.
Sorry, sir. I think there was a mistake here with regarding the color issue, and it's supposed to be a green one, but the original that we were sent to, it was indicating a yellow or red one. But if you compare the 2 years under pre-termed objective, you can see there was an advance in 2010-2011, and in 2011-2012, there was a qualification. The information is still the same. It's just the arrow that has changed. So that's why I was putting it under perspective. Moving on to the first entity, the National Skills Fund. In the 2011-2012, in the financial statements, they still received unqualified opinion with findings similar to the prior. There was a significant improvement with regards to pre-termed objective, where there were no findings at all. With regards to compliance, there were still material misstatements on the financial statements. There were also findings on non-compliance with asset and liability management, as well as internal audit, as it were in the prior. The next entity is W&R CETA. For W&R CETA in the 2011-2012, it's one of the four entities that I alluded earlier on. They received a qualified opinion. That's a regulation, a qualified opinion on financial statements and pre-terminal objectives, as well as compliance with laws and regulation. So they didn't do much as they did in the prior. So it was a regression on the three areas, on financial statements, pre-termed objectives, and compliance with laws and regulations. That's why it's indicative in red. EDTP CETA, they received an unqualified opinion with no findings. That's an improvement from last year's audit. Pre-termed objectives, they didn't have any findings, and they didn't have any findings on compliance with laws and regulations. MASITA, they received unqualified opinion with findings. They also received findings on compliance and laws and regulations. HWCETA, they received unqualified opinion with findings, and they got an adverse opinion on pre-termed objective, which is also a regression if you compare to what they received in the prior, although they didn't have any findings on compliance. CASPITA, they received unqualified opinion with findings on the financial statements. They also got a qualification on pre-termed objective, and there was no findings on compliance and laws and regulations. Food-based CETA, they received unqualified opinion with findings. They also had findings on pre-termed objective, and they also had findings on laws and regulations. FGM CETA, they received a qualification. It's one of the four entities that received qualification. And the qualification was basically on contract granted and commitments. There was also compliance with regards to the internal audit. That's the finding of compliance with those regulations. AgriCETA also had a regression. Although they received unqualified opinion, they had findings in the current year. There was an adverse finding on the pre-term objective and also findings on compliance with laws and regulations. Construction CETA, which it wrote an unqualified opinion with findings, it was adverse on reports on pre-term objective and also findings on compliance and laws and regulations. In CETA, received unqualified opinion with findings, so here it's in case no findings, but unqualified opinion with findings, that's a regulation from the prior. Last year we received unqualified with no findings at all on pre-term objective and compliance. M2A, there was no change in opinion for M2A, they still maintained unqualified opinion with no findings on pre-term objective and compliance. EWCETA, they received unqualified opinion with findings. There was a disclaimer on pre-term objective and there was also findings on compliance with laws and regulations. PCETA, although they received a qualification of opinion, it's a much better improvement from what they had in the prior. In the prior, it was a disclaimer of opinion. So in the current year, they received a qualification and they were qualified on the reported performance information plus findings on compliance with laws and regulations. MICT-CETA is one of the new CETAs that were integrated, but previously it was known as ICET. It received unqualified opinion with no findings, much improvement from last year's results, and there were no findings on compliance as well. FACET, it still maintained the same audit outcome as the prior. They didn't have any findings on pre-term objective and compliance with those are regulations, and they still maintain the unqualified opinion without a finding. BAMCETA, same outcome as FACET. They received unqualified opinion with no findings. There was no findings on pre-term objective as well as compliance with those are regulations. TransportCETA received unqualified opinion with findings. There was still a disclaimer with regards to pre-term objective and there were still findings on material misstatements in financial statements. SACETA, it was qualified in the current year on the financial statement. If you compare to the prior period, it's a regression in the sense that in last year they received unqualified opinion with no findings, but in this current year they were qualified on the financial statement and they also had a disclaimer on the pre-term objective as well as material misstatements in regards to non-compliance with laws and regulations. Services CETA, they received unqualified opinion with findings, which shows a little bit of improvement from the outcome in the prior year where they received a qualification, but they still had disclaimer on reported pre-term objective and findings with regards to non-compliance. LGCETA is the only CETA that received a disclaimer of opinion in the current year, and it's a regression if you compare with what the outcome in the prior year. They also had a disclaimer with regards to pre-term objective and they had findings with regards to compliance with laws and regulations. CETA, there was an improvement in the current year's audit outcome. They were unqualified with no findings on both pre-terming and compliance. Council for Higher Education, there was also an improvement with regards to its outcome. They received unqualified opinion with no findings on pre-term objective and compliance with laws and regulations. SAQUA maintained the same outcome in the prior, unqualified with no findings at all on both pre-term objective and compliance with laws and regulations. QCCO, the unity, there was no outcomes in the prior year, but it was unqualified with findings on pre-timely objective and compliance. NASPAS, still the same outcome, they were unqualified with findings on compliance with laws and regulations, although there was no findings on pre-timely objective. The next slide, slide 13, indicates just a summary of the key control status that led to the findings that we highlighted previously. Basically, an analysis of the leadership, financial management, and governance within the different entities. We could not put all the entities here because we could not make a good presentation, so we grouped all the CSAs together and we chose two of the biggest entities within DH to analyze the key control statuses. The slide after this will explain what we mean by the key control statuses. Here it's showing, like, for DH, it's still in yellow because we're saying it's work in progress. They've done so much and they're still doing more. So that's why the status quo is yellow. Yellow is saying work in progress, still in progress. There's still things that they're working on to get to that clean audit outcome. Similarly, it's the same as NSF and majority of the CTAs as well and NASPAS. So here is basically the breakdown of that particular analysis there in the talk that I've just talked about, trying to explain those yellow statuses that I was explaining in the prior slide. And saying, if you see, most of the issues here on governance, it's 52% of the entities within the DH portfolio that are ready up to that stage of governance. They're having good audit committees, they've appointed internal auditors, and although some entities are still struggling with that, so that's the analysis of those yellow lines that I explained in the prior slide. On financial and performance management, it's also work in progress, but 32 of the entities are already there. They are good. And with regards to leadership, that 7% of the leadership, they already attained that status of good leadership with regards to the processes. For this analysis of my presentation, basically is a brief summary and everything, but if the committee will provide the committee members with the detailed findings that relate to those particular outcomes on the slide. So this is just a summary of the audit outcomes. Couldn't bring everything together in one presentation. And then the next slide is basically looking at the progress on prior year commitments or initiatives that the department together with NSF plus the CSAs, what they committed on to do so that they achieve clean audit outcome based on the outcomes from the prior audit that we carried out. If you recall, last year there were issues on supply chain management and the department committed to centralize the supply chain management, which they've done, and the current assessment of that status is it was completed and it resulted in reduction in the regular expenditure that we identified in the current year. There was also a commitment to hold a workshop with National Treasury together with the Auditor General to obtain an understanding regarding the requirements of audit of pre-timed objective. That workshop was also carried out last year in September, October, where pre-timed objective was discussed, where targets had to be relooked at, and the strategic plan had to be revised, and then all the targets were said to be smart. That's why you see an improvement in regards to pre-timed objective. There was also a commitment to implement controls to ensure that information provided for financial statement disclosure is reliable. This particular commitment is still in progress. That's why we also had issues with regards to material misstatements, but the department is still working on that. There was also a commitment to develop and implement IT strategies, policies and procedures. That one is also in progress, but the progress is a little bit slow. So the IT issue is still work in progress, and hopefully the department is giving it urgent attention. There was also a commitment to develop a plan to fill critical posts. In the current year, most of the critical positions within the department were filled. Then there was also a commitment to that strategic plan for CITA's relation to the 2011-2012 financial will be finalized by the end of August 2011. That one was not made, so it was finalized in May 2012. There was also a commitment to ensure that an agreement is reached whether the NSF should be listed or not between the department and National Treasury and the required legislative changes made if required. As of 31st July 2012, NSF had not been listed, but from the interaction that we've had, that it's about to be listed any time from now. I think that one's going to be attained soon. Then there was also a commitment to issue regulations in terms of the Skills Development Act for grants allocated by NSF. Progress has been made regards to that, although finalization had not been done by that 1st July, the time when you finish the audit. And then there was also a commitment that to confirm that the relevant internal controls relating to monitoring of projects have been implemented and ensure that required systems and policies and procedures are approved and instituted for NSF. Policies have been approved. They've been drafted, but not yet implemented. There's still more work to be done in regards to those policies and procedures. And then on page 18, basically, our recommended commitments for clean administration for both EHEL, NSF, and more specifically to CITAS, saying that consultants to transfer skills and the skills transferred to be evaluated on a monthly basis. We also recommend that effective implementation of approved organization structure, taking into account the skills gap identified and developed, IT systems that produce credible financial information and non-financial information, bringing bodies with skills with regards to finance, performance information, compliance, and information systems. Let internal audits be sustainable. Continue monitoring compliance or establish a compliance unit. And management should also do a self-assessment of the key controls as part of that, of their duties on a day-to-day basis. Should also monitor compliance with policies and procedure and take decisive action on non-compliance. Monitoring of bad planning by entities resulting in an increase in non-compliance with PFMA and treasury regulation. Identify and monitor strengths and weaknesses of the portfolio to ensure sustainability. Develop checks and balances to ensure credibility of information. We should also have produce monthly financial and performance reports that include disclosure notes. As well, we recommending that supply chain policies should be updated to ensure that they're within the treasury regulations. The effective utilization of internal audits, like I had already said in my prior statement, review of the internal audit scope to include coverage of pre-termed objectives and compliance with their plans. We also recommend that training program should incorporate understanding of why financial statements are prepared, and should also inculcate culture of understanding key controls, understanding why service delivery reporting is critical, continuous professional skills development for all staff, and monitoring thereof. And finally, quarterly reinforcement of clean administration processes by the accounting officer. My next slide is basically, like Metti explained in our opening remarks, is analysis of the key areas that we look at and how the department plus CTAS, NSF and NASFAS, how they're doing at the moment. When you look at supply chain management for the department, it's almost that. There's no major issues with that supply chain management. Also, future objective as well, they're almost there. HR, they put initiatives in place to recruit and fill up critical positions. IT controls, that one requires improvement. And material errors in financial statements also requires improvement. Regards to NSF, there are no matters regarding supply chain management, everything is fine. There were no issues regarding to audit of pre-terminal objective. Regards to the HR issue as well, almost there, but they're still filling up critical positions. And IT controls, they need to improve. And material errors in financial statements also need to improve. Regards to the CTAS, as Mitch explained as well, there's been some improvements, but there's still lots of work to be done regards to supply chain management. Similarly, there's also work needs to be done for audit of pre-timed objectives. Some improvement has been achieved with regards to HR, but lots of work needs to be done with regards to that. Lots of work to be done with regards to IT controls and material errors in annual financial statements. And as far as some improvement as well, improvement in audit of pre-terminal objectives, but also some improvement in HR processes, and some improvement in IT controls as well as material errors in financial statements. Then slide 5 on other matters of interest. This is basically slide just indicating the regular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we identify in the current year. For DH, if you look at the figures for 2011-2012, there was a decrease in regular expenditure. NSF, there was an increase in regular expenditure from 48 in the prior year to 125 million in the current year. There was a significant increase in regular expenditure with regards to the CTAS as well. If you look at the total amount, if you compare, in the prior they had 160 million, and in the current year, if you sum up of all the regular expenditure within the CTAS, it comes to 402 million of regular expenditure. There was no irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure for NASFAS. And then lastly, this one is just a pyramid of accountability, basically showing our responsibilities as the different parties to ensure a clean, or to achieve clean audit outcomes. What it's trying to do is explain all the issues that would enable the departments and entities to achieve clean audit outcomes. On this other side, it shows flow of credible information. How is that possible for you to get credible information? First, you need to appoint competent, skilled, ethical, and staff with integrity. You need to do daily, weekly, monthly financial and performance disciplines. That's your financial report, your management account, so that you don't have material misstatements in your financial statement. On top of that, if you're doing that, then hold your leadership accountable. Let internal audit review these monthly reports. let them give you assurance. Let your audit committee give you assurance to those reports that are being prepared. Plus bodies such as the legislature as well to ask management on how well they're doing the financial report, or ask, keep on reinforcing the need for credible information. And then lastly, the assurance module is basically talk to the pyramid above there. It's just saying that for us to produce credible information or to receive credit out, clean audit outcomes, we need to, it needs the involvement of each and every one of us. The fundamental of all the information or the assurance should be given by management, should do self-assessment of controls and information that's being produced. Bodies such as legislature as well, they need to ask for some information. Our bodies such as internal audit as well, keep on giving assurance regarding the information that we're producing as well, to give external assurance. That brings the end to my presentation. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before I leave, we're preparing to come to take over. The thing that is important is that in our entities, 400 million, over 400 million has been utilized. This could be for a good purpose, but without following the laws and regulations of this country. It's a very serious matter. It's quite a serious matter. In simple terms, it's like doing lab okolabeng, you know, at home. You know, at home in a family. There are no laws that bind you how you must use your budget. You must just wake up, buy bread, you know. Even if they say this bread is 500, go so love it, you can buy it. But in government, you cannot do that without following the law. I think we need to go very deep into this. It's a very serious matter that 400 million in our CETAs could be utilized without following the law. It means lawlessness in simple terms. You know, and the fact that it is only irregular, it does not mean that there could not be even bad things. So that's why we must drill deep on this 400 million. That's the first point I would like to raise. And secondly, many of our CETAs have been have a finding on information that is unuseful for audit purposes. The auditors do not use the word useless, but I think it is useless information. They use this good one, unuseful, it's euphemistic, it's very acceptable, but it means useless information. You can't use that as a basis for assessing the performance of a CETA. Basically, it means that the CETA could utilize the money for something else, other than. That is the message. I just want to clarify for members. Unusefulness means many things. That we don't know what they are doing in terms of performance. We are giving them money, but we don't know what they are doing. In simple terms, I just thought I must simplify that for members to be able to zero in on those matters. My suggestion would be that in the next few days, we must then call the CETAs that have got disclaimers, followed by those that have got these findings, all of them in groups, because we might not be able to meet with one because of time, but we really need to meet those that have got problems and so on. We are happy that the department is improving here and there. They'll only have got to explain their irregular expenditure to us, and so on, and how they are dealing with all these issues that have been raised by the AG. Can members engage with the AG if they would like to ask questions for clarity? And
Chair. I apologize, Chair. I think there is an omission in the presentation that I had promised. I promised to give the detailed overview of the achievement of the universities and the FET colleges. I will send the presentation to the members. Unfortunately, I see that the slides were not included, but just at a very high level, out of the 23 universities, 19 of them received clean audit outcomes, which means they were unqualified financials, with no findings on predetermined objectives, no findings on compliance with rules and regulations. Three of them received unqualified financial opinions with findings on compliance with rules and regulations or predetermined objectives, yes. And one received a qualified opinion with findings on predetermined objectives and compliance with rules and regulations. Chair, at the end of the audit, there were 21 universities that submitted their annual reports on time to the department, and two that submitted the financials after the legislated date. And I must mention, Chair, that this was not due to our involvement in the audit at all. It was due to unrelated reasons. And then on the FET colleges, 11 FET colleges received clean audit outcomes. 12 were financially unqualified with findings on compliance with regulations, because you recall that we said that we didn't audit predetermined objectives on the FETs. 6 of them were qualified, received qualified audit opinions, and 2 received adverse or disclaimer opinion, and there are 19 audits of the FETs that are still outstanding. When I send the presentation, I will send the presentation with the details of the names associated with all of those, especially those that are outstanding, because we still have 6 that are still outstanding from the 2010 financial year. And Chair, just coming out from the presentation, what I would like to add to what you have said, there's an Excel spreadsheet like this that is circulating, and that gives the details of the findings related to the outcomes that Joshua just presented. And I would just like to highlight, Chair, with regard to the predetermined objectives, you'd recall that during the training session that we had, we spoke about the reasons for the variances in terms of the non-achievement of the predetermined objectives, and you realize that the department did not always provide reasons that are supported, because what we're saying is these reasons need to be auditable. And if I may just give an example, and you again note from the narration that there are a number of entities within the DHEC portfolio that did not achieve their targets as set in terms of the spread plan. And what we are saying is, when a department or an entity sets the targets and indicators, it goes with a budget. And more often than not, the department would indicate, or the entities would indicate, that they couldn't achieve their targets because of budget limitations. However, we need to be able to audit the evidence that they couldn't achieve the targets for the reasons that they are given. It is quite critical. And if you also look at the pyramid of accountability that Joshua talked to, because it's got 3 levels. Joshua, can you just go to the presentation? The pyramid has 3 levels. There's the bottom level, there's the middle level, and there's the top level. And what we are saying, the bottom level is the base that holds credible information that will flow to committees, including this committee, to do effective oversight, for you to carry out your effective oversight responsibilities. And the third level, what we're saying is there needs to be appropriate skills within the department, capacity should be sufficient, we need to recruit people that know what they are doing, that are aligned to the mission and vision and the threat plan of the organization. And what it means is every individual in the organization needs to have a performance contract that is aligned to the achievement of the goals of the department, so that they understand their roles and responsibilities within the organization, and so that they are held accountable for what they need to be doing. And that's why we call this a pyramid of accountability, because every individual in the organization needs to be accountable for their outcome, because each person's outcome influences the outcome of the department, the achievement of the goals of the department. And an entity needs to have policies and procedures that will enhance effective internal controls. And these need to be communicated to every person, and they need to understand where they fit in. And if you remove those light blue triangles which we say hold, they are the base, if you remove them, the whole structure collapses, because then leadership cannot also influence the bottom level, because those basic things were not set. And included in that accountability process is also proper planning, because if we don't plan properly, we obviously will not be able to identify that the budget that we have will not enable us to achieve the targets that we have set for ourselves. So if we plan properly, if we do proper monitoring and evaluation, we'll be able to identify that we will not be able to achieve what we need to achieve. We'll be able to put plans in place to correct whatever deficiencies that resulted from us not being able to achieve the targets. The other thing that I just want to highlight in this Excel spreadsheet, Chair, is page 5 of the document that talks to the material adjustments to the financial statements. And if I may, it's probably not added here, but we do find instances where entities make adjustments to performance information as well, which means they report on performance information on a quarterly basis, and what they report on is not accurate, and they have to make adjustments at the end of the year. And I'm highlighting this specifically because we do report on material adjustments to the financial and performance information, and it again reflects on that pyramid of accountability, because we are saying if everybody in the organization takes accountability for their area of responsibility, and every management level takes responsibility in ensuring that checks and balances are done on a daily basis, financial and performance information is reported on a monthly basis, and everybody has done their credibility and reliability tests, we will be in a position to present to the audit committee credible information, and in turn, we will be able to respond to Parliament, to portfolio committee credible information for Parliament to perform its oversight responsibilities and support departments where necessary. Because the challenge in the public sector is that we tend to report on income expenditure related items throughout the year, and naturally we as the auditors, we see the disclosure items for the first time when the financial statements are submitted on the 31st of May, and the disclosure items is normally an area where you find these material adjustments to the financial statements. I must say that if an entity has material adjustments to the income statement item, which is the income and expenditure item, then it's most likely that that entity will end up in a claim of opinion. So, largely speaking, the entities will end up in a qualification because they account for income and expenditure throughout the year, but the disclosure items only at the year end. And this is also evident if you look at the CEDAs as well, because the CEDAs generally have a challenge with regard to their commitment, which is an area that they also don't monitor throughout the year. And we find that actually most of all of the five CEDAs, the four CEDAs qualified and the disclaimed one, they had a challenge on commitment, which is something that they don't monitor throughout the year. So those are the areas that I just wanted to highlight.
Let's request that there must be a workshop organized by the department with the CETAs on matters of predetermined objectives with the Accountant General's Office and National Tesla officials dealing with higher education. We are willing as a committee to attend that workshop because we seem to be a bit more clarified than the CETAs on what we need about predetermined objectives and what should be reported on a quarterly basis and at the end of the year. Maybe this is for the last time I'm saying this to our administration parliament. The Office of the Accountant General, I'm saying this is for several times I'm saying this. The Accountant General's Office on a monthly basis releases expenditure for every department. We have got the responsibility as a committee to know the spending patterns of our own department and entity. And the Accountant General is a very generous man. He's willing to send to emails as and when you need. You just would be part of the people he sends that information, and members could see how our department and entities are spending, so that then we could ask them. So we realized you spent $1 billion last night. What was it? You know, let's do that. And that is to the parliamentary officials. But I think it's for the federal, and these things are recorded. When you speak like now, there is a recorder or carry, so you can check. It's not for the first time I'm talking about the Accountant General. Unfortunately, they don't even know who is this person. They don't even care to know who is the Accountant General. He's a very generous man. If you want to have an unqualified report, you must interact with his office. He will help you all throughout to assist you through planning. People go to workshops, but Bariki is a planning exercise. And they make many things. They say we'll build the moon, and they know you can't build the moon. And in the end, they realize you can't build the moon. They adjust that predetermined objective. So, but if you speak to the Accountant General, you'll be assisted. That, no, let's not say we'll build the main university. The two are enough, two universities, and we start working towards that. And where there are limitations, you say we could not do this because who could not get this, and you provide that to auditors, you will not have a problem. There is not, you see, failing to execute a project is the problem. The problem is the inability to account for that. If you are not able to build because you under budgeted, say that, and then we know that you are not good at budgeting or budget analysis, and then we help. I'm sure the age they're but the DG certainly, I think, has done a great work in terms of initially engaging with the Office of the Auditor General to ensure the progress we have. I think maybe we need to do something about the CETAs. Let's have that workshop. I think it can go a great deal to solve some of those problems. Members, I think the best question is Gina.
just give this opportunity to the members to interact with the AG's report, comments, questions, and whatever that you wish to say around the presentation that has been made. And just noting hands, Honorable Dikoho, Honorable Makubela, Honorable Ojane, Honorable Chili, in that order for now.
Thanks, Chairperson. A comment really. Just say that we thank the Office of the Auditor General for this information. It's very useful. And I think more and more we're getting it in a more clearer form, more user-friendly. And that, of course, there are recent issues here. They are only reporting on the conduct or misconduct of others. So we can't go in, can't say to them, explain. We'll wait for those people to come and explain. But just to, and I think we're directing this to the department, in line with what the Chairperson has said, Honorable Malale. I need to understand really. You have a yellow. You know, yellow means it's consent. You had fruitless expenditure, and then you have that again. You had irregular expenditure, and then you have that again. You know, it's as if we have come to accept it as some kind of a medical condition. It's chronic illness. We can't do anything about it. I still want to hear, Chairperson, of somebody who has been taken to the cleaner for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, for irregular expenditure. Like the Chairperson has said, here are the rules, but this person just has no regard for the rules, person or person. They have no regard for the rules. Every year we come and sit in this house and we hear, well, there is still fruitless expenditure. There is still, what is happening? What is happening? Maybe it's something that the department will have to address us on one day and say, you know, with regard to this one in this sitter, this is what we have done. In that entity, this is what we have done. But for now, it's really discouraging. It has become a constant refrain. But I note what the Office of the AG says about universities and ethnic colleges, that they will send the presentation. I think it's fair to say we reserve the right to call them if we don't understand those presentations, to come and explain. We can't ask questions on those things. We don't have them in our hands. Thank you.
Chair, thanks. I'm not sure. Initially, my thinking was that probably we needed to allow the department to make their presentation as well. I take it the AG will be still here, and we then handle all the questions and the comments and all that thereafter. I know you did have a ruling, but I thought that would be waiting. I do have a question as well.
Okay, I was going to say, Honorable Kubela, if ever you have questions that will need the department, just reserve them. But for now, if ever you have questions that are directed to the AG, please post them so that they can respond to.
My question will be on the LGCT, which had an unqualified audit opinion 10-11, and now they're on a disclaimer. It does tell you that something went terribly wrong there. What is it? Obviously, in your finding, I didn't go into the detailed one, so probably it's there. But I just thought you would share with us what has gone wrong. To me, it can be skills, it can be capacity. Because if at some point they were able to get a clean audit, and the next year they can't achieve that, not even a qualified. It must be that something very serious happened, and you have to share with us as well that you are
there. Thank you, Chairperson. Two Chairperson. Mine is just to seek some clarity on some of the information not being useful, what are the characteristics of such information if it's not useful? Thank you, sir.
There's so many unqualified findings, and those which qualify, they are not reliable or not useful. It's just a point of understanding.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether this question has been asked already, but in terms of the irregular expenditure at the CETAS, could you please be given an indication of what kind of irregular expenditure it was? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. From the ages in the data remarks, I was curious. There was a statement that universities are submitting different forms, but one paragraph after the detail. What is the basis of that? Is there something that needs to be done in order to correct that so that we have a template for that? If yes, who does that? This big document, this big one, I am on page 5. 2.2.5 material errors. That finding there, it worries me. It says the financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial report framework and were not supported by who. What worries me, we go through this exercise year by year in year. One ended up not knowing why is it after years of doing the same thing we can get a report that says these different structures are still doing that. It just
thank you.
Thank
you very much, honourable members. Let me give you two the ages of this, and can I limit time now because we need to start with the annual report. Can I give a time up until our first time to respond to that so that by our first time we can go off with the department of our reports? Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be quick and brief because most of the questions that came through now, I have partially addressed them. To the first comment on norm improvement, absolutely that is a concern for us as the Auditor General. What we have found is that the entities now identify the irregular expenditure for argument's sake and report on irregular expenditure completely. So when we audit in the presentation that the Auditor General presented last week during the NCOP, you'd realize that irregular expenditure that was identified through the audit is actually going down. And this is because entities have found a way to identify irregular expenditure and report on it. And what we are saying is, yes, there is no improvement. However, the concern that we have is that if there is no improvement, the situation is getting worse because there should be processes to correct it. And we are looking into rather if there is no improvement, then for 2 years at least, then we then classify it as a red because you cannot be yellow forever. You know, we say in yellow because you move into a green. So if you are not going to a green, then you should be red. So if there's no improvement in the current financial year, you'll probably see most of the entities going to red. As you see, yes, there was a problem of leadership. I must say, however, that over the years we have experienced challenges with the leadership at the LGC. CISA, it's through tremendous efforts throughout the years that LG CISA has achieved some qualified audit opinions. Normally, around the 30th of July, we would receive amended financial statements from LG CISA after all the audit effort. So for the current year, there was absolutely no response from the LG CISA, and we had to cut off. We couldn't go on forever. So the problems of the LG CISA have been there, it just collapsed. I think there was complacency on the part of leadership that at the 11th hour they do achieve unqualified opinions, and they were banking on that, but the problems were just too big. Because that is what happens if you do not perform monitoring and oversight throughout the year, and you know you think you'll do it during the audit, it just becomes too much and unmanageable, and that's exactly what happened at the LG CISA. Unqualified, Chair, if I can just through you briefly, we report on three areas. We report on financial, we report on predetermined objectives, and we report on compliance with rules and regulations. And just to make sure that I don't take too much of time, perhaps when I come back to the portfolio committee, I need to do a brief presentation just to refresh the memories of the members on what the different opinions relate to. So the financial statements, we express an opinion in the audit report, and that's where you will see qualified, which means there are problems. Unqualified, it means it's clean, there were no problems with the financial statements. Disclaimer of opinion and adverse opinion, big problems there. When you go to predetermined objectives, we do not express an opinion in the audit report. We report factually. We look at two areas. We look at the usefulness of the performance information, and on usefulness, we look at whether the indicators were specific, were measurable, were achievable, were time-bound. All of those things equals usefulness of performance information. And then we look at reliability of performance information. On reliability of performance information, we look at validity of supporting evidence that was provided, whether information reported is complete, whether information reported is accurate. So on performance information, we look at the usefulness, as I said, SMART principles, and reliability, which is validity, completeness, and accuracy. And then you go to compliance with rules and regulations, where we report on factual findings. I hope. But I think, Chair, if I will come, I can come later to give a detailed presentation on what all of that means. Irregular expenditure, right at the end, I'll ask Joshua to give detail on that. And inconsistent reporting on performance information at the universities, as I said, the regulation just requires the universities to, or the Council of Universities, to give a self-assessment of the performance of the university. There's no framework currently and guidance on how they need to report. However, the department is working on revised regulations, and the framework has now been included in the revised regulations. And the regulations, I think the department will give more detail on that. Will be en route for approval and finalization. Material misstatements after year end. Again, Chair, I think I did indicate that when you look at that pyramid of accountability, the set level where you need skills, internal controls, you know, proper roles and responsibilities that will support that accountability, that will also support every person in the organization doing what they are supposed to be doing. And in most cases, material misstatements to financial statements, it's either somebody not doing what they are supposed to be doing, or leadership not exercising effective oversight and monitoring and evaluation to be able to identify these errors. And again, it's the problem that the no discipline in the public sector generally to prepare monthly financial statements that are complete and accurate. So if we can employ that discipline to prepare financial statements that are complete, accurate, and credible, we will, to a large extent, address these material misstatements. So if I can just give over to Joshua to give the detail of irregular expenditure statements. Please, Joshua.
Thanks, Macy. Majority of the irregular expenditure arose as a result of non-compliance with supply chain regulation, except for, I think, one entity that had one payment of severance packages, but most of it was non-compliance with supply chain management.
Okay, thank you very much for the response. Members, I think I really have to promise that it means year after year we need to refresh, we need to have sort of a workshop where we refresh our mind. I know these accounting terms are a little bit confusing sometimes, but as they have promised, yes, we can organize a sort of a refresher course, as we always have it, so that a sort of a workshop, so that as we interact with these reports, at least we know that members at least understand the basis of these terms. It's just one follow-up, then we're done.
No, no, they... I hear what is being said, but you know the approach that you know this entity or this department they have irregular expenditures, they have disclosed it. So it's almost like we are saying it's fine. So can have it as long as we disclose it. But I don't think that's where we stand as public representatives. We are saying it must not be. And I'll link this to what was reported to have been attributed to a statement attributed to the Auditor General, Mr. Nombem, addressing some meeting somewhere, saying, you know, people get away, you know, people do things with impunity. In public service, people get away with murder. They do these things. Now, I want to understand, is it not also one of the responsibilities of the Auditor General to say, this is terrible. Somebody must be charged. Does that fall outside their ambit? Because those utterances could have been understood to say we've been saying to them, charged, they are not doing it. I want to understand, is it part of their responsibility to say up to here, no far. As for this entity, something must be done.
Okay, just to add on that, like the every two colleges, about six of them, since 2010 that have not submitted the report, should we keep on injecting funds to such, what are the measures, what can be done to correct that?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think in terms of the AGSA responsibility and commitment that we have made a few years ago, you'd recall that the AGSA made a commitment to increase visibility and this is to management, to assist them to improve their audit outcomes and to increase visibility to parliament committees to capacitate every stakeholder to be able to hold different levels of management accountable for their actions. In terms of the AG's responsibility, we report on the findings that we have identified during the audit. We report these findings in the audit report. We make recommendations to management as to how to correct these findings. We brief various oversight institutions on these outcomes. We also meet with the minister on a quarterly basis to brief the minister on the outcomes and progress made on these outcomes. And this is intended to assist executives and oversight committees to hold management accountable statement is not the responsibility of the Auditor General to hold management accountable. However, we do report on this, and that's why we have increased visibility, so that we can raise these red flags, so that corrective action can be taken. And corrective action can be taken in a number of ways, and we do make these recommendations through our audit processes. With regards to the FETs and whether Parliament should continue to pump funds into the FET colleges, I believe that higher education has a constitutional mandate on education, and the information is presented so that the department and Parliament can then make appropriate decisions with regards to supporting the public in the area of higher education. And Chair, I will be unable to answer that question, and I believe that that's what Parliament and the department needs to take a decision on.
Thank you very much, the AG's office. Yeah, there are so many things that need to be taken up. But for now, I think I just need to hand over to the Director General of the Department of Basic Education and Training. Higher Education and Training, I'm sorry, to the DG of Higher Education and Training. To take us through their annual report, take into consideration the things that we have from the AG's office. But all in all, DG, I think we'll also be interested in hearing more of the laws and regulations around the universities and the FET colleges, because I think it's part of our oversight role to make sure that there is value for money in whatever public entity that is there. So if ever we still have not having the regulations, to make sure that we get the proper reports from such, we would love to hear from the department exactly what is it that is in place and how well can we make sure that in future we have all of them accountable the way that we would love to. So can I hand it over to you?
Thank you, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think from the standpoint of the department, we always appreciate no engagement with the portfolio format, because this exercise really empowers us, and every time we are here, we come out being better persons in terms of looking and responding to the issues that are of interest to the public and our citizens generally. Firstly, Chair, may I state that from the standpoint of the department, we take cognizance of the issues raised by the AG quite seriously. And the matters that have been raised are addressed in quite a number of interventions, which that is evident by the measures we put in place in the department. Although we received an unqualified opinion, key matters raised by AG have been addressed by the action plan adopted in the department, which looks at the finding or each finding, risk associated with it, and measures put in place to reduce risk and address the findings. Currently, we are tackling the 59 issues that have been raised by the AG, and we are being monitoring them through the systems of the department, with a view of ensuring that we maintain the portfolio of evidence. And I think also for the record, the irregular expenditure, we
looked at this quite thoroughly before we came here. But I think the figure the CFO gave me, which he assured me that it's a correct figure, it's not 2 million, but 485,000 for the record. But the CFO is going to dwell on that matter later on when we are going through the presentation. Now, the presentation is structured looking at the background, performance on predetermined objectives, financial statement, as well as AG's report, because we think we should not get around it, because it's a tool which is assisting us to find the way in the area where we are weak and our entities are weak, and respond to that accordingly, with a view of improving the situation. Now, the 2011-12 annual report is the second report post the split of the Department of Education. The annual report includes the following information, which is general information, information on predetermined objectives, annual financial statements, human resources management. I think the IT is still battling here. Now, one other point we want to highlight as well. National Skills Fund, its performance information and annual financial statement is incorporated into this one of the department. And the Department of Education, the department is still listed as Schedule 1 of the Public Service Act as a functional department. It hasn't been listed yet. All outstanding balances through the engagement with the AG and the Accountant General have been closed by the 31st of March 2012, and balances that could not be cleared were transferred to the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education Department. So in regard to the predetermined objectives, we are looking at the key achievements, the status of the targets and the challenges that we experience, and measures that we're putting in place in order to respond to those challenges, because it can't just be challenges and do nothing about them. Now, I would request branches, we'll start with program one, to take us through quite closely on the issues that are contained in the presentation for the Department of Education. And thereafter, we'll go to program two. Lulu?
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you, Church. Program one, the purpose of this program is to conduct the overall management of the department and provide centralized support services. I will go to the key achievements during the reporting period, which is 2011-2012. The focus for 2011-12 was to build on the work that had commenced during the 2010-11 financial year, and to put the necessary administrative systems, policies, and procedures into place, as well as providing core capacity for the smooth running of the department. 187 posts were identified for filling, and 133 of these we managed to make appointments. 54 were in the process of being filled by the end of the financial year. In respect to staff turnover, we have managed to reduce it from 12% in 2010-11 to 7.6%. A number of policies were developed and approved, 3 in ICT, 16 in human resources, and 8 in supply chain management, with a total of 27 policies. The call center has continued to provide a meaningful service to citizens by responding to 95% of the queries that were reported in the presidential hotline. The macro organizational structure of the department was approved by the minister and was submitted for consultation with the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Human resource and employment equity plans were also approved by the minister and the DG respectively, and 27 posts for regional officers were created, and we started filling posts for KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Western Cape province. Thank you. We started filling, out of the 27 that were created, we started filling posts for KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Western Cape. And processes to fill the remainder are ongoing. We reporting. Chairperson, there's a problem with our system. Yes.
Change the speech, my dear.
We reported 6 disciplinary hearings that were dealt with, which led to 3 dismissals related to the mismanagement of funds during that period. I want to go to the challenges, Chairperson. I'm going to be brief in respect to that one. We have been experiencing challenges. I'm sure this one was also highlighted by the AG in respect to ICT services. That is in as far as the local area network desktop support, which has been very, very slow in addressing the needs of the users in the department. The training levels of the security staff also was identified as an area that needed to be improved or attended to. The lack of modern call center technology, as well as inadequate facilities for the call center operators. That is in as far as the call center of the department is concerned. The procurement of new offices by the Department of Public Works did not materialize in 2011-12, and we also did not have a unit that looks at risk management within the department. Now, what are we doing, or currently what are we doing to address the challenges that were identified? In respect to ICT, Chairperson, we are in the process of appointing an external service provider for LAN and end-to-end user support. We are increasing capacity in the Security Advisory Services Unit, and also sending the existing security officers for relevant training. We're developing a new integrated system for the call center, and also we started a process together with the Department of Public Works of identifying land with a view to build offices for the department, as opposed to you know, rental of offices. And lastly, we are engaged in a process of making contract appointments to deal with the risk management gap that was identified. Thank you very much.
Good morning, honorable members, chairperson. Program two that I'm
sorry, can I disturb you for a moment? The chairperson is now back. My time for acting is over. Can I come over, chairperson? Thank you.
members. I'm going to report on program 2 regarding human resource development, planning, monitoring and coordination. The purpose of this particular function is to provide strategic direction in the development, implementation and monitoring of departmental policies and coordinate activities in relation to the human resource development strategy for South Africa. The budget is broken down into 5 programs. The first sub-program is human resource development, strategic planning and coordination. The second sub-program is dealing with planning, information, monitoring and evaluation. Third one is on international relations. Fourth is legal and legislative services. And the fifth one is social inclusion and equity in education. Key achievements during the period under review includes the integrated information system, development thereof, and namely 3 subsystems within this information system. The one deals with a higher education and training information system that is integrating our higher education information system, our FET colleges, our CETAs. So we're still in the early phases of the full integration of this particular system, but considerable work has been done and we have achieved the predetermined objects set out for them. The higher education training management information system deals with the administrative information of our institutions. The labor market intelligence system has been, we have commissioned the HSRC together with other partners in terms of looking at the information outside the department in regards to the supply and demand for skills and labor market information intelligence. And thirdly, it's very important for the department that we need to ensure that what we provide opportunities for are brought to the notice of our learners. So the information frameworks, that's the policy underpinning these areas, have been developed. So for example, with career services, a number of departments that have to work together to align the process. We need to indicate what do we want to deal with. In the information framework, it's very important to also get our institutions to be committed to provide the information in the formats that it is requested. And therefore, the education information policy, it was very helpful in building the school's information system when it was under the DOE, while it's still relevant to FET colleges and adult centers, is being extended to CETAs and the higher education. That document has gone out for public comment. The minister is in the process of considering the public comments, and it will be then thereafter considered to become policy. As I've spoken about the labor market project with the HSRC, just as we're also working with UNESCO, the United Nations Information Service, a branch of UNESCO, dealing with the supply of information in regards to our international obligation. And because we were split as a department, we had to redo the whole database with them. The data collection for FET and artisan sectors have been strengthened, and we've introduced an electric web-based data collection system. Current international relations, we have hosted the India-Brazil South Africa Academic Forum, where academics get together to look at the development issues within this grouping. Chairperson, members of the portfolio committee, the international study visits, a number of them were undertaken, and they absolutely have been useful in assisting us in developing our policy. In fact, one of the bills that are currently in front of the, in fact, 2 bills that are in front of the House deal with some of these learnings. For example, the visits to Switzerland, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, the delegation, ministerial delegation, came back and were quite impressed with the issue of the way that these systems are supported by institutes. And therefore, before this House, the House is So there has been considerable learning, and other colleagues in other branches have also perhaps assisting them in their work. We've signed agreements, cooperation agreements with Cuba, Rwanda, and Burundi, and a new trilateral cooperation project sponsored by USAID, that is United States, South Africa, and some countries in sub-Saharan Africa. In regards to legal and legislative services, I think this House is very aware of the time that we spend in the House regarding our amendment bills that are presented. In the period under review, we successfully completed the Higher Education Law Amendment Bill, as well as the Skills Development Bill, and the Further Education and Training Policy Bill. That was the 2011-2012 process. Those bills have been promulgated, signed off by the President, and now so that has been achieved. In legal and legislative services, we also have to convert some areas into regulations and notices, and 3 sets of regulations and 8 notices were drafted. 42 legal opinions were drafted, 60 agreements were drafted, and 24 court cases administered. And Chairperson, in your communication with the department, you did indicate you'd want a list of those court cases that are available here, which I will table with the Secretariat for you to manage the best that you can in regards to those 24 court cases. And then support was provided to the Ministry of Tandem on recognition of prior learning. Now, challenges. There were no major challenges, as all programs operate. Let's put it this way. There were no major challenges. All programs operated based on a reduced and constrained budget. 43 targets were fully achieved, 9 targets partially achieved, and 1 target not achieved. The 1 target not achieved has subsequently to date been achieved. The 9 targets partially achieved, 8 of them will be achieved before the end of the financial year, because Chairperson, in determining the predetermined objective, there are some factors that cannot be predicted. So it was aimed that there were a raft of policies that had to be approved. And in the defining that indicator, it was indicated as approved policies. But the difficulty is we cannot determine how long the consultation process takes. We have to go back to stakeholders sometimes. And there are other processes that overtake events. For example, the green paper process. Because these were loose policy processes, that those processes, so there are 8 of them, so today that is it. How did we also mitigate the issue of these policies? Partly it is a unit called social inclusion and equity, and a number of the policies are within this particular unit. The director only assumed duty on the 1st of September. These predetermined objectives were already established at the end of 2010. One of the staff members, senior staff members, has to be seconded to the previous Deputy Minister's office. So, Chairperson, I thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to talk to the University Education Program 3. The purpose of the University Education Program is to develop and coordinate policy and regulatory frameworks for an effective and efficient university education system, to provide financial support to universities, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, and the National Institutes for Higher Education. There are 5 budget sub-programs, that's academic planning and management support, financial planning and information systems, university subsidies, policy and development, and teacher education. In terms of our key achievements, enrollments within the university education sector, that's the public sector, increased from 896,000 headcount enrollments in 2010 to 938,201 in 2011. That's 5% growth in headcount enrollments. At the same time, the graduates from the system increased from 153,325 in 2010 to 160,626, also just on a 5% increase in the number of graduates. In terms of support to students through NSFAS, the increase was from 148,387 in 2010 to 216,874 students in 2011. That is a 46.1% increase in the number of students supported through NSFAS. In terms of the predetermined objectives, the ministerial statement on enrollment planning in universities was approved and communicated to all universities, and that is now governing the enrollment processes through our universities. We also had received the task team reports from the two new universities and an approved project plan, project management team, and project steering committee to oversee the establishment of the universities was put in place. The final draft of the policy framework for the provision of distance higher education in South Africa was also submitted to the Minister for approval. However, it wasn't published in that financial year. Since then, it has been published for public comment, and comments have been received. The review of the funding framework was undertaken, and the report will be presented to the Minister by November 2012. Project plan for the establishment of the National Central Application Service was developed and work had started. I think recently the Minister has announced some issues around progress in that regard. The report on the Ministerial Committee and the review of the provision of student housing was launched and completed. A process has since been undertaken in terms of developing a policy and guidelines for student housing at our universities. The implementation of Phase 3 of the Higher Education HIV/AIDS program was successfully implemented. There was also a national transformation seminar that was held as a follow-up to the Higher Education Summit that had been held in 2010. There was the launch of the Ministerial Panel on African Languages. The Integrated Planning Strategic Planning Framework for Teacher Education and Development in South Africa was published and jointly launched with the Department of Basic Education. Minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications was completed and published as policy. Implementation has started with all our universities in that regard. And the draft minimum requirement for FET college lecturer qualifications was completed and ready for public comment. That has since been gazetted for public comment. In terms of the strengthening foundation for teacher education project, that was in its first year of implementation. There were a number of achievements. 14 universities were offering foundation phase programs, which was up from 13 universities the year before. 24 new childhood education academics were employed at universities supported through the program. 13 research and development projects involving 20 universities were supported. There's been a publication of 33 journal articles within that year. And then scholarship support was provided for 4 honours students, 34 master's students and 39 PhD students. And this is part of a human resource development process for improving and strengthening the ability of the system to produce foundation phase teachers. So as the system expands, we will have the human resources necessary. In addition, the South African Journal for Childhood Education was supported by the program, and it was launched. Two editions were published in the year. In addition, the Search Association, the South African Association for Research in Early Childhood Education, was established, and that will be supported for the three-year period until it becomes self-sustaining. In terms of challenges for the university education system, a key challenge was around issues of governance in the university sector. During over the last period, three universities were placed under administration: the University of Zululand, Tshwane University of Technology, and Walter Sisulu University. And also, there were independent assessments of two other universities: Vaal University of Technology and Central University of Technology. Overall, 29 targets of the predetermined targets were fully achieved, 26 targets were partially achieved, and 10 targets were not achieved. In terms of the partially achieved targets, most of those, in fact, almost all of them, were achieved in terms of the work done. However, in terms of the description of the target, they were not achieved. For example, in the case of the earmarked grants, the target was one report on the use of all earmarked grants. What had happened was there were 23 reports in terms of every earmarked grant. So those have now been consolidated into one report and are achieved. In terms of the internal challenges, the staff shortages remained the greatest challenge. In terms of mitigation, 11 of the targets have now been achieved, and 19 partially achieved, and 6 not achieved. That is of the 26 targets partially achieved and 10 targets not achieved earlier. Some of those targets that were not achieved are related to issues that are no longer relevant in terms of changes within our policies related to the green paper and decisions made. An example would be around the decision made to implement a transformation oversight committee instead of an ombuds office, for example. So we couldn't achieve the ombuds office because the decision was made rather to put a transformation oversight committee in place. In terms of the staff capacity, a number of posts have been advertised, and very importantly, 4 director posts have been advertised, which will increase the capacity of the branch tremendously. We are also working at improved communications and relations with universities, improved monitoring and evaluation measures, including the implementation of the new reporting regulations and criteria for earmarked grants. The Auditor General mentioned the reporting regulations. The drafts are currently with the Minister for approval for publishing for public comment. It was quite a long consultative process with all the institutions in order to get these drafts in place. And in terms of criteria for earmarked grants, some of the issues, for example, in relation to our teaching development grants and our research development grants, we've put in place specific criteria against which we will monitor the system. So this will improve the use of those funds as we go forward. We also are working at strengthening relations with our entities, the CHE and SACWA, with respect to their responsibilities as described in the NQF Act, to ensure better alignment between ourselves in terms of DHET objectives. And then the last one is around performance management within the branch as well, in those areas where we have found that performance has not been up to scratch. We're working on focusing and monitoring and ensuring that that improves. Thank you. reporting on program 4, which is the vocational and continuing education and training. The purpose of this program is to plan, develop, evaluate, monitor, and maintain national policy programs and systems for vocational and continuing education and training. And this includes further education and training colleges and post-literacy adult education. This program consists of budgeted 3 sub-programs, and these sub-programs are planning and institutional support, programs and qualifications, and the national exams and assessments. In terms of the key achievements that these programs managed to attain in the 2010-11 financial year, we've seen an increase in student numbers, and this has increased from 345,566,000 students in 2011 to 396,819 students in 2010, from 2010 to 2011, that's the increase. And we've also seen an increase in students who are funded through the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. And this increase relates to increase of from 61,703 awards which were made in 2010 to 165,273 awards made in 2011. The community education and training centers and the conversion of public equity colleges into vocational and continuing education and training institutions, this has been gazetted as delivery institutions for the research sector for public comment. We've also seen that the National Senior Certificate for Adults was also published for comment in this financial year. Continuing with the achievements, there has been an additional National Certificate Vocational Program, and this is the Transport and Logistics, which has been introduced, and this was implemented from January 2011. There has been a ministerial task team which was established, and the purpose of this task team was to review the National Certificate Vocational Qualifications at all levels, which is from levels 2 to level 4. The year has also seen that the curriculum for an additional program, namely the primary health, was completed, and this was done in partnership with the Health and Welfare Center and the Department of Health, and this will be implemented with effect from 2013. There's been an internal continuous assessment guidelines that were developed, and this was mainly to focus on strengthening the delivery of the National Certificate Vocational Programs. 826 lecturers were trained in this financial year, in the 2010-11 financial year, with the aim of improving the teaching and learning. Access into FET colleges was reasonably expanded through the provision of the bursary, and this allocation was 1.2 billion. And as previously indicated, awards were made to 165,273 students which were enrolled in the state subsidized programs. The Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, which is the QCTO, has assumed the role of the quality assurance for the NATED N4 to N6 programs, Report 191, including the National Diploma for Report 191. There's been on-site training for NCV Level 4 and the other ABET, General Education and Training Certificate, the panels, in terms of the setting of question papers and site-based assessment tasks which were held. Continuing with achievements for 2010-11 financial year, we've seen 9 national examination cycles were held. 7 were for the FET colleges sector and 2 were for the adult education and training with the following achievements. The registration of 866,491 candidates for the national examination, the monitoring and registration of 382 public and private examination centers, the setting and the moderation of 1,417 question papers and 65 site-based assessment tasks, and the printing, packaging, and distribution of question papers to the FET college sector. 2.5 million scripts were marked for the FET college sector, and the capturing of 5 million marks for the FET college candidates was also done. Monitoring of examination centers during the conduct of examinations and the marking sessions throughout the year. The standardization of all examination marks and the resulting and partial certification for the FET college sector. We've also seen that the enrollment has increased by 34%, and this refers to the increase from 345,566 to 396,819. We've seen the success rate based on the November 2011 results has showed a marked improvement in terms of the certification rate, and this refers to an increase from 24%, which was the certification rate in 2010, and this increased to 40% in 2011, and this has been across all the levels. And in relation to regulation of the private equity colleges, the following were achieved. 501 private colleges were registered, 123 private colleges were registered as examination centers. We need to also bear in mind that it's not all private colleges that are registered that also apply for registration as examination centers. We've also seen the compliance and performance reports on 384 provisionally registered colleges and the identification of 28 illegally operating private colleges and the subsequent arrest of their managers. Chairperson and members of Parliament, we've also experienced challenges in the 2010-11 financial year, and these relate to the capacity constraints which were experienced in the areas of on-site security, staff allocation, and budget allocation, and this is in regard to the examination function. 42 targets were fully achieved, 15 targets were partially achieved, and those that were not achieved have already been achieved in this financial year, and the outstanding ones will be achieved by the end of this financial year. We've also experienced delays, and this was in relation to securing the National Treasury Technical Assistance Unit in order for them to provide the technical expertise in the scoping and supporting of the migration of the provincial vocational education and training institution budget and personnel to the competence of the Department of Higher Education and Training. We are battling with the continued operation of unregistered private institutions, and this is being dealt with by the Department of Higher Education and Training with assistance from the SAPS. We've had challenges in relation to the lack of readiness across the adult education training systems to implement the funding norms for public adult learning centers. The State Information Technology Agency inability to deliver on their service level agreement has also posed challenges, and this is related in the main to the examination system. Also experienced delays in the certification of equity college candidates. And in relation to these challenges that we have experienced, and what the department has done in relation to this, is that those that were not achieved, there have been targets that have been achieved, that refers to 11, 9 partially achieved, and those remaining that have not yet been achieved have already been implemented for achievement in this financial year. There's been a turnaround strategy which has been developed for both the equity colleges and the adult education and training centers. We have successfully, through a collaboration with SAICA, we've successfully managed to appoint chartered accountants or professional accountants in other instances to appoint them in colleges as chief financial officers, and these have already been appointed, and we have in this regard also prioritized the colleges that, as indicated in the AG's report, where severe challenges have been indicated. Again, through collaboration with SAICA, we have managed to appoint human resource and labor relations managers for placement in the equity colleges. The department is working hand in hand through a collaboration with UNISA, and there's been a task team developed that will be currently undertaking an audit of the FET College's national examinations processes to date, with a review to advise on the on the national examination function for improvement of the exam system. I thank you, Chairperson, members of Parliament.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning, honourable members. The skills branch presentation on the actual annual report is on page 77 to page 79. That is the brief summary, or the detailed summary, sorry. And then the details are on page 113 to 123 in the annual report itself. The purpose of the branch, as reflected in the annual report, is to promote and monitor the national skills development strategy, with three sub-programs set up on National Skills Development Services, which is inclusive of the NSA and the NSF, development and promotion, and you will realize that under quality development and promotion, the QCTO has subsequently to, during the financial year, then became a public entity, and it has therefore formulated its own annual report. The key achievement. One of our key achievements, Chairperson and honorable members, was the operationalization of the National Artisan Moderation Body, which we have managed to partially operationalize, and it has, during this period, Chair, ensured that we have a list of trades gazetted for the first time in the country. We have one gazetted list of trades, but also it has managed to ensure that its issues, I'm just giving instances of examples of some of those achievements around the national operationalization of the NEM. For instance, trade testing regulation has been issued by the very same body, but also it has been appointed as the first assessment quality partner, AQP, of the QCTO, which then means in essence that the QCTO, as it appoints those bodies that develop qualification, for instance, 23 qualifications are currently being developed by the QCTO via different AQPs. The assessment task of those qualifications will then be the responsibility of the NEM. Also, NEM saw how we were able to exceed our target for the achievement of 10,000 artisans per annum. We exceeded that. We achieved 13,168 artisans at the end of the financial year, 2011-2012. We also convened a very successful skills conference on the technical financing of the NSD yesterday. We managed successfully and dispersed CETA levies on a monthly basis. We are able to produce and release the SCAS skills information, which was aggregated as per the sector skills plan. We've updated the OFO codes, which is now available. The new CETA landscape for all 21 CETAs was finalized, and relicensing of all the CETAs for the next 5 years was also finalized. Albeit in that very same period, we delayed relicensing the PCETA, but then we have subsequently addressed that. The PCETA is now as well joined the rest of the other CETAs to be relicensed for the next 5 years. And CETAs were supported in the development of and alignment of the sector skills plan through the SSP framework that we developed for them to guide them, and the strategic plan framework. The key challenge that we have, it is the scourge of vacancies that continues to be doubled in Lela because of the competition we have with the private sector for the skilled artisan that does the assessment in the workshops. And therefore, there is a big challenge in trying to recruit competent and qualified persons around that. In respect of our target wealth as well, at the end of the financial year, we're not able to achieve all our targets. We had achieved 42 targets, we fully achieved, 14 targets were partially achieved, and 13 targets were not achieved. But also the challenge of ensuring a full organization of the NEM also remains a challenge. But the challenge, particularly at Inhlela, is the regular breakdown of IT services, among others due to cable theft. As we speak now, for the second time this year, there's been another cable theft around Inhlela. It was the cable theft happened around the neighboring township of Tembisa, which then impacts on the IT network of Inhlela. But also there's also the delay in the provision of advice by the NSA, on the annual performance against the NSA by the NSA. To date then, how then have we tried to address some of these challenges? To date, 12 of these targets have now been achieved. And 8 now are partially achieved and 7 not achieved. So we only have 7 not achieved from the original 18 that were not achieved. There is ongoing advertising and headhunting in order to address the challenges of Indela. But we've also started the re-engineering of Indela to focus on RFP and for artisan needs, which is another critical area that we focus. We've already advertised to create capacity in order to drive this particular function. Yes, in respect of the full operation of the NEM, the challenge is therefore is actually the lack of funding, because the NEM dependent on the budget of Indela for its operation, but it is not sustainable. And therefore, from our previous bid to the previous year, we were successful. Treasury supported our bid and indicated that it's okay, it's a statutory function. However, they then insisted that the money must be sought somewhere within the department. The same happened again this year. We resubmitted our bid, because it's going to be an annual process until we're able to be successful in that regard for the full operation of the NAM. However, we didn't stop there. We then sourced funding from the NSF in order to be able to create capacity to ensure the full operation of the NAM. I can safely report now that we have secured that funding, and we have advertised 16 deputy director posts, and we are going to use also the 16-10s, which we are going to source from the FET colleges, so that they can then be part of the support we give in operation of the NEM. But we'll be targeting those learners that we have done, for instance, in engineering studies, N6, and EN6 studies, or even the NCV program. So in that sense, then, we'll be able to increase the pool of interns within the department. There's also a process to purchase a wireless microlink to avoid this reliance on these cables that keep on being stolen, you know, and therefore impact on the IT link at Indela. So that work is currently being undertaken at Indela. The NSDS data collection is in process across the country. As we speak now, the NSA Secretariat has organized constituency and stakeholder forums across the country in order to conclude this work. With regard to the NSF, Minister launched the NSDS stream in January 2011, and the NSF managed to review its funding framework to align it with the new NSDS 3. You know, we always had these funding windows that we always spoke about in respect of accessing of NSF funding. Now we have one framework that will then determine how we utilize or access the NSF funding. 14 targets were fully achieved, and 7, I think we've covered this part, 7 partly achieved, and 5 targets have actually been achieved, while the remaining 2, in respect of the NSF, in the process of being completed. In 2011-2012 financial year, the NSF paid out grant distribution to the highest amount ever in a year since its inception, representing a 69% of its budgeted revenue. And the correction there, it's actually 79 projects were funded in relation to IPEP, LGP, rural development, disabilities, health and education. For instance, there is strong work that is being undertaken with the Department of Trade and Industry in order to support programs arising from IPEP. For instance, the tool making program that is driven by the DDI has been heavily supported by the NSF. I'm seeing it as an example to some of those. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, if I can continue with the financial information. The next slide is a summary of the outcome of the financial information for the 2011-12 financial year. As you can see there, for each program, expenditure was way up in the 90%. Program 1, administration, 97.9% spending. Program 2, 98.3%. Program 3, basically 100%. Program 4, 99.9%. Skills, 93.4%. And then direct charges, although not an official program on the vote of the department, we included that as the funds flow through the department. That is the levy transfers to the CFAS and the NSF. You see there that it's 99.3%. If you look at the totals, from the total allocation, including the direct charges, 38.394 billion, total spending was 38.306 billion, leaving us with a total under expenditure of 87.7 million, the majority thereof on the direct charges. If we exclude the direct charges, the total under expenditure is 17.9 million. The next slide reflects on some of the reasons for some of the variances, the other expenditure that took place. Just to flag the important ones, first of all, Program 1, administration, the 3.2 million not spent under administration is mainly for some vacancies that could not be filled by 31 March and concomitant under expenditure on machinery and equipment. Also, thanks to the AG that we had slightly less billing from their side, so the total invoices ended up to be slightly less than what we budgeted for. In terms of the next group, Program 2, 3 and 4, if one look at the total under expenditure, the variance is small in relation to the total amount allocated, and therefore there is no specific explanation. However, under Program 4, you would note that, if you go back to the previous slide, that the under expenditure is around 4.6 million rand. Although it is small in terms of the total allocation for that program, it is a relatively big amount. And the reason there is mainly due to outstanding claims that could not be processed for examiners and moderators. That was more than 3 million of that under expenditure of 4.6 million, and that's the main reason for that under expenditure. Program 5, in skills development, the underspending there is 8.6 million rand, and that is mainly for the internal security system. That process is run by the Department of Public Works, and progress was relatively slow, therefore expenditure could not take place, therefore the underspending there. And under direct charges, although it's not listed, perhaps just to explain, the 69.8 million under expenditure, which resulted in transfers not made specifically to CETAS. What happens is that when SARS provide us the revenue that they generate from the levies, they also indicate which levies belongs to which CETA, and we accordingly transfer the funds to the various CETAs. Now the 69.8 million not transferred were levies generated which SARS could not identify to which CETA those had to be transferred. That has been corrected in the meantime. In the first part of the financial year, it has been identified and consequently it has been transferred. If we go to the next slide, it just indicates the same information, just the economic classification. And you would note there that the main areas where there is under expenditure, as already explained, compensation of employees, the non-filling of posts, as well as the cost for examiners and moderators that I referred to, lies under compensation of employees. Goods and services, small underspending there. That includes also the audit fees. And then under transfer payments, perhaps just to highlight there that under departmental agencies and accounts, the second classification, that large under expenditure is exactly the direct charges to CETAS not transferred. That's lying there. Under foreign governments and international organizations, you'll note that we did not transfer everything. This is payments to international organizations such as the Commonwealth of Learning. It's influenced by its exchange rate differences, and we are not allowed in terms of the PFMA to change any of these allocations, to redirect these funding to any other area. So that is fixed, and whatever we save there goes back to the national revenue. Chairperson, then on the next slide, and that is something that the AG already touched on. It's just a summary of the audit outcomes for 2011-12. NSF, unqualified in terms of universities, all unqualified except for one institution that is qualified. For the FET colleges, 28 unqualified opinions so far, 6 qualifications, 1 disclaimer, and 15 institutions that must still submit. From the CETAS, 16 unqualified, 4 qualified, and 1 disclaimer. Our other public entities, NSFAS, CHE, SACWA, and QCTO, all received unqualified audit opinions. For the department, just a summary, also an unqualified audit opinion. Some of the key matters raised by the AG, and we did not list everything and all the areas already addressed by the AG in their presentation. One specific area that is a standard matter that the AG report on is significant uncertainties, and those are defendant in lawsuits where the department are opposing some claims and where the ultimate outcome is not yet final. So AG reports on that so that the readers of the annual report can actually note that. Restatement of corresponding figures, the AG referred to that as well, and those were lease commitments in 2010-11, the previous financial year, where our corresponding figures were adjusted due to a change in the classification. The performance information, as alluded to by the AG already, the major variances that we had were sufficient appropriate evidence were not available at the time of the audit. These are some of the areas that we are attending to. Perhaps just to explain, although it's not on this slide, the matter around irregular expenditure. If you look at disclosure note 25 in the financial statements, you see that the final reported irregular expenditure amounts to 485,000 rand. Chairperson and committee members, you would recall that during 2010-11 we reported the 4 million irregular expenditure based on activities at Indlela. This was the 485,000 rand continuation of some of those problems until the stage that we centralized the supply chain management function, which was around May-June. In that financial year, and therefore the amount is so much more smaller than the previous financial year because of the steps taken at that point in time. The 485,000 rand is still yet to be condoned and is still under investigation. Then, Chairperson, the last slide. The DG referred to the action plan that we have in place. To address the matters raised by the AG, we are busy with that. Our first official report on the actions taken will be by the end of October. All matters reported on and all matters addressed will be going to the audit committee as well as to senior management in the form of a report so that everybody can note any progress and any problems that we experience by trying to address all those areas. Thank you, Chairperson. That's from my side.
No, thank you very much. I think we are going to allow members to interact with the presentation. What makes our work easier is that it doesn't seem the committee must make any major recommendation to Parliament in regard to the budget review of the because this presentation is in response to Section 5 of the Act, which we use to evaluate the performance of the department. And if there are any requirements to have additional money to the department, then we make a recommendation in the House. But from the report, it's clear that we don't have to make such a recommendation. So it's just for us to deal with better performance, and I think that makes me happy.
Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My questions will be based on two programs. The first one will be the University Education Program. I'm looking at the increase there on the enrollments and also on the graduation, which we are pleased with. But there will be a further interest in that growth, especially on the graduation rate. Would the department be in a position to tell us of those that have graduated, how functional have they been in their respective communities? Wouldn't we say, Karen, that such an increase in graduation would have added to unemployment? What is your take in there? That's the first question. And the second, which I regard as very important, the foundation phase. Teachers who are trained for the foundation phase. If you link this with basic education, where there is a major concern that we don't have enough teachers for that phase. Now, is there any collaboration between the two departments as to how many teachers you encourage universities to produce for the basic education department, or universities just produce as they feel or within their budgetary constraints? What is the position? Because I regard this phase as very, very, very crucial in our education system as a whole. The last question will be on program 5, skills development, which is also a very important program. When you link it to the economic requirements of our country. You look at the AG's report, you look at the CITAS. One of the aims, objectives of this program is to coordinate the CITAS. But look at the AG's report. The picture there is not a very pleasing one when it comes to CITAS. In your coordinating function, are you able to see all these red lines when it comes to CITAS? Because the argument would be, if we were to take the argument to its logical conclusion, would be if the CITAS are performing like this, it means it's money wasted. They might as well be closed and the funds transferred to somewhere else. Just your views on this dismal performance of the CITAS, which by definition would come under your supervision and coordination. I thank you.
Sorry, sir. I thought you were referring to somebody else. Apparently, there's no limit to questions or something.
The limitation is being a chair. You only facilitate, then members dictate.
Yeah.
just to note that the annual report itself has got quite a number of areas which are not covered in terms of explaining why particular targets were not achieved. There's quite a lot of inconsistencies in some areas. When you look at the column for comments, it's explained why there's no progress or no reports or plans compiled or developed or approved. But you get to others, quite a number of those instances. There's just no explanation at all. I don't want to cite pages. I think you would have noted this. But if we have to, we may draw your attention to particular pages and say, these are the issues which needed to be explained. And they haven't. I think that's a concern which needed to have been handled. But then there are areas which would need clarity and indications, but let me start by those that I think probably are key. The one would relate to the fact that about 29% of the major variances can be adequately or reliably reported in terms of evidence. Perhaps it will be time here that we draw numbers to pages so that we don't just talk generally, and perhaps it will create difficulty in responding to those. I think that is on page 156 of the annual report. Just in case the numbers don't have that. And page 157 will then talk to the internal audit unit, which was not able to submit the report in terms of the treasury regulations. And I think we would need to attend to those because it's a serious problem if that can be handled. The other would relate to the financial misconduct. That out of the 31 officials, 25 of those were never subjected to any disciplinary hearings. And that was identified through or by the forensic investigations. And the question would then be, why couldn't that be actioned by the department? And I think it's an area for concern. You'll note, Chair, that I may not necessarily be going program in that necessarily sense, but I think officials will be able to sort that in their responses. And so the other will relate to the Indela security system, which has been referred to even in terms of the presentation. Has been delayed in handling that. And it is said on page 175 that the delay is caused by the amount of consultation time required. And the question is, what is that amount of consultation required? Because that on its own is highly costly. The more we delay, and that as well mean alluded here as to what is the causing us across the department in that particular regard. There has been some explanation which I think is not convincing, Chair, on the issue of the merger process. This is a question we had asked quite a number of occasions as to, and that is in on page 93, to saying that there's need for that analysis which will point at what sort of review we will need, that sort of targeted kind of interventions to be made in terms of best practices and so on, which has actually delayed. And the concern there is that we need not to be reacting specific measures. We must be able to then say, this is what that whole process is telling us. These are the indications in terms of the measures. This is where we are, and this is what probably we need to be able to move. And I'm just saying, DG, that there's need to fast track that a lot of time control, and then be sure that we are able to guide the other institutions that will be coming. For fear, Chair, that we may need to be taking other members' questions, let me pause. But if we still have time and other questions are not raised, I may still be able to raise them. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I take you to slide 7. I'm trying to come back to the committee. There are some issues that I've forgotten. There in slide 7, you are referring to 27 posts for regional offices created and started filling. If you could update it on that. What are regional offices? What is there? What do they do? I have that old way of thinking, national, province, whatever. I take you to slide 17. The last slide 17 is that last bullet. The background to that is that on Friday last week, I visited this deck project, Stellenbosch, which is building student hostels for the medical students. And when I got there, I must say, I was very excited. I thought this is the solution to the problems of our institutions. And I was adding that to what we said when we were at WUSU and at the University of Fort Hare. I readily checked with the rector, because Fort Hare happened to be my constituency. Rector, well, what is your feeling about this? His reaction was, both students and staff of the University of Fort Hare visited that project. And if I quote him directly, he said, "Abuye Mengova Law." They were excited about the project, wishing how it could be taken to their institution. But according to the director, the department is not approving that. And the perception which could be wrong is that because Stellenbosch is rich enough, he's able to afford to do that without going to the university department. They are doing it. Could be other rich universities are going to follow that. What could it be that is so serious that these poor universities like WUSU and Fort Hare, who for whatever reason, will have to go to the department, that they are not allowed to do that. Allow me to take you to slide 19. Again, it's just updating me again on some of these terms. In slide 19, it is said 24 new child education academics. What are those? To me, it's a new term. When we talk about new child education academics, that's for my information. I take you to slide 25, the last bullet. It refers to 8.6 lecturers trained to improve teaching and learning. Again, that's my curiosity. Who did the training? And if I was an aspiring lecturer to lecture in these FETs, where would I be trained in order to be able to do that? Thank you, Chair.
Mona?
Thanks, Chair.
My first question relates to targets that have not been achieved. My noting indicates that all the programs have some targets that have not been achieved. My question is it not because of staff shortages, perhaps? My second question relates to the program that will be starting in 2013 on is it health program 4. It's primary health. My question is, will it be available in all institutions, or some institutions will be offering it 2013? Then my last question relates to under expenditure. That is partly explained as because of staff compensation. I think it said it's staff compensation. I would like that to be explained further, because my understanding is that you can't be understanding our work. You can't be understanding on people that are not employed. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first one would be on on the objectives that were not met, achieved. Just to get an explanation, Chairperson, well, on the annual report ending in 3rd March 2012, there are a lot of objectives that have not been achieved, but it's nice to hear that some of those objectives now, there is work on progress and some have been achieved. I just want to understand, Chair, for future purposes, is to say, as we're in the current year, we're reporting, we know that there are objectives that are being achieved now, but that were set for the previous financial year that is being reported to now. Where do we place those objectives, actually, Chairperson? Meaning to say, come the annual report for the current financial year, are we saying where do we locate the achievements for those objectives? I don't know whether I'm making myself clear, Chairperson. As to say, we need to be very clear as to say when the department saw that they could not achieve them by the 31st of March, did they roll over to be the new objectives for the new current year, financial year, or they, you know, so that we are very clear when we go along with the reporting of such achievements. Chairperson, on the issue of the regional offices, yeah, we see that there are regional offices that have been established. But on the report that we had, even last year, we had a target that by 2011, that's the report that we have as a portfolio committee, by 2011, in all the regions, all the regional offices will have been opened and filled. So I just want to know to which date are we shifting that to now? When can you see all the regional offices being in operation? Looking at what has been done now and where are we shifting the date now? Chairperson, on program 2, there is a report where it said there were no major challenges. All programs operated on reduced and constrained budget, and we find that there were targets that were not achieved due to the reduced and constrained budget. My question then would be very simple, Chairperson, is to say when those targets were firstly made, was there a budget that was saying if we
want to achieve this and this is the budget that we have. Then as the processes went on, the budget was reduced. That is why you see most of those objectives not being achieved. Or it was bad planning, yes, from the beginning to make that such objectives not being achieved. Chair, I did not get anything on the funding, on the committee, on the funding model for the universities when it comes to program number three. I know there have been reports, we've got a committee in place. I don't know whether we're supposed to get it from this report, but I am interested, Chairperson, as to say how do we see or how do you foresee ourselves in future funding these universities so that we can have sort of a balance in what we get from the Chair. I'm towards my finishing of the question. I'm very interested to listen in when this university, the one university that keeps on coming yesterday, it got a qualified audit report. If we can get that university so that we can even know whether it's this university that are already in, you know, just I'm not saying we must name and shame them, but this one, I think, for me, it's quite important that we get to know them. On lastly, Chairperson, on the issue of effective certification, yes, we have been promised, Chairperson, that, and the date that was put was the end of October, where it was said all the certificates, that the backlog of certificates will be cleared by the end of October this year, emanating from the previous years. If we can get an assurance now and the confirmation that indeed we still stick by the 30th of October and by the end of this month that backlog would have been cleared. I just want to get as to where do we stand as the department. Lastly, Chairperson, the issue of the strategic plan by the FITAS that has not been signed. How far are we now? What are the FITAS doing? How are their strategic plans? Are we going to see them being signed so that we can know that we are working with them with the strategic plans that have been there? The very last one on page 355, Chairperson, it talks of job evaluation. And with the department, I think there is nothing that has been done, or very minimal, if ever there is a move that has been done on job evaluation of the staff within the department. What's the problem? Why are people not evaluated, as the annual report is showing? Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you. I think the CFO will advise us on the application for coordination. Usually it goes to National Treasury and so on, but ultimately a coordination will remain as a tick on the neck of the department if it does not come to this committee, because it must be presented to Parliament. Any condemnation, unless the AG's office might not ask me otherwise. Any condemnation must go to Parliament, ultimately. I don't know. You'll correct me there. I'll take maybe some run before I can. The LSF, you've got good 79 projects. This information is good or not useful. Because as the portfolio committee, we don't know what these projects are. We cannot tell the nation that we are proud that there are these projects implemented by NSF. They are a mystery to us as South Africans. They are unknown maybe to Matugama and the department. To whom do you account on this project? Yes. Very important. Because we need to know what sort of projects are there, allocations, so that as a committee, we could know and follow this money if we need to. Not that if you give us 79 projects, you start following them, running around, but if you need to, we'll do so. But you need to disclose this information to the committee to know, like you've done very good in terms of the cases that you present to us. I think let's get information regarding those policies. I mean, those projects. Policies. In the last meeting with the department, we said, please submit all these policies that you said have been approved and signed by the minister.
is important is because we need information, we need evidence. We call it evidence in auditing terms. We need, and we said, bring along a portfolio of evidence of these things so that then we can say, indeed, we've done this, we've done that, we can look at them. Sometimes, if we've got a supply chain policy, some of us know whether it's illegal or not by just going through it. We'll tell you that, no, this is not in conformity with the PMA and its regulations and practice laws and all that. We can tell you that. So we would need you to provide that so that we are in agreement. The skills program should be able to tell us maybe how many FET or University of Technology students have been put on these scholarships. How many artisans have we trained in this period? You know, it gives us a sense of progress in terms of our work in this area. Once you don't have that, once you report anything about money without these things, know that you're not talking to us. Because we are not interested to hear about money which we know that we have allocated. We need to know the work done in relation to the money. You only remind us by the money being reflected there, but all we need to know, which is more serious, is what have we done with the money? That's the purpose of accounting to this committee. Not to tell us the budget has been well spent. Because that is unuseful information. The useful information is we have built two universities with this 3 billion. If it's a 3 billion, for instance, this is an example. That's what we need to hear. Not that Dr. Verstappen was able to spend the 3 billion very well. We need to know all what. That's the purpose of coming here. Once you don't know that, we are going to have problems with the committee. I think in the future, let's improve on this thing. Because tomorrow, we must, as parliament, we must adopt as a committee recommendations to parliament. I don't know what we want to say about the department in relation to artisans. We don't know about artisans, but we know how much money we spend. We don't know how many lashes, but we know how much we spend. You know? So we need to come with information to the people of South Africa. It's not to us here. It's for the people to hear how this department is faring in terms of performance so that they can be happy. You see, the failure of this department is the failure of the minister, and the failure of the chairperson is the failure of this committee. When the AG reports on whatever inability by citizens to report on useful information, it's because maybe we're not doing the proper work, or somebody is not listening to us. It's only Songa Ise who listens to us. Because Songa Ise has implemented our recommendations on predetermined objectives. And then he has got an unqualified report. But these many sitters, maybe there must be a strategic debate, comrade. A strategic debate about, you know, it's still fine. The need for sitters. If we can debate that, comrade, we will need to debate that. Do we really need sitters? Are they working in South Africa? Or must we have a single institution that distributes money to these various sectors? But I think there's a point where we need to begin to bear this letter, as South Africa. Because this money, we don't know what is being used for. As South Africa. This is a debate we need to really bring forward and debate the sitters. There was a committee appointed by the president, the review of state-owned enterprises. And we understand also the sitters were supposed to be part of those that were being looked at. We're interested as a committee to know what has been the recommendation of that committee in respect of sitters. But I think we're paying these sitters for nothing. The fact that they are Christian does not mean that they should be permanent. You can review them. But just that the minister is responsible for relicensing of these institutions. If they can't account, why continue having them? That is my view. It's a very strong view I'm beginning to develop out of my experience of not getting any good performance from this institution. You cannot keep things that don't work for you. Pay these CEOs, I don't know how much they earn. I've not even gotten any, I've not met any salary structure of this institution. That's it. we really need to think very deeply about that. Let's allow maybe the department some 5 minutes to respond, and the members can re-engage with the presentation.
Oh, thank you, sir. No, the comment we really welcome, because the purpose of us being here, sir, we stated upfront from the beginning that is to get ourselves empowered and also understand the areas that would need focus attention from the standpoint of the department, so that we do not become a disappointment to the citizens of the country. And we think that is very much important. We take comments as well as directives from the committee quite seriously. And rest assured that when we're coming back, we would have improved from where we are today. There are a number of questions that have been raised. The first question on the increase on graduation rate, perhaps it's a bit difficult question, but what we are doing as a department to increase the prospects of our graduates to get employment? One, we've engaged with the industry quite robustly in regard to opening up their workplaces for ease of access by our graduates in the form of workplace exposure as well as placement in the end. That's how the National Skills Accord was born, and engagement with a variety of companies and opening up the public service as a training space, amongst other things. Second, we've ensured that the programs that are offered in our institution improve in quality. That's why where there are problems, there are very focused and targeted interventions by the department as well as with entities and partners that would add value in that regard. One of the programs that we have with SAICA in regard to the quality of accounting programs that have to be offered in our institution is informed by that kind of thinking. Lastly, Chair, I think the studies, including the Ford Foundation study of 2007, which is showing the rate of unemployment in the cohort of youth 18 to 24 years of age, which was 2.8 million then. When you are looking at that, the better an individual improves his or her educational level, the greater are the chances that he's getting no employment. So there is, in terms of scientific research, a correlation between the improvement of one's academic progress and the chances that one would get employment. Lastly, what then we are doing to have scientific information at our disposal is this huge research project we're involved in with HSRC on labor market intelligence. On the matter, we are approaching the development in the system in the context of the work we have done in the Green Paper, looking at the post-school education and training system as a whole, with a view of trying to understand what has been working quite well, where the weaknesses are, and how can we respond to strengthen the system. And in that context, we are actually looking at the question of the matter, not as an isolated focus area, but within the system, because we are advocating the principle of multi-campus arrangement, articulation, as well as alignment in the entire system. When that then is ready in that regard, we'll be able to share with the committee and the public. But what we want to avoid in creating an impression that we are reviewing matter with a view of demerging. We don't want that to feature in all the engagements and the processes that we're involved in. We are undertaking a study of the system as a whole with a view of improving it and ensuring that it produces quality out of it. The regional offices, what has informed us in establishing the regional offices? One is that in terms of the post-school education and training institutions and facilities that are all over the country, we do not have regional presence or proximity. Whether you talk of interaction with universities, monitoring of various projects which are evolving from the National Skills Fund, amongst other things. I'm just making an example. Close interaction with adult education and training centers. Surely, in our analysis, we discovered that we can never be successful in ensuring quality services and interaction with the public out there from Pretoria, because it becomes fly in, fly out, fly in, fly out. We need a closer presence that would be at the proximity of our community the best we can. That's what is informing our approach. That's why we are trying to ensure that we fast track this program so that we can better respond. On the student housing, a staff structure. Now, while engaging with universities on this matter, we went to Stellenbosch ourselves, and we engaged with the engineer in Stellenbosch. And what they briefed us about, this structure in actual fact is just a stopgap measure. It's not a structure for the sustainability in the intervention of providing student accommodation in our system. It is because we have these needs and we experimented. In actual fact, its lifespan, if I'm correct, is about 50 years or so. Am I correct, Brenda? Yeah, it's about 50 years or so. Now, which begins to inform quite a number of universities there that it's an investment you have to utilize it in a very considered way, because you can't launch the country into overhauling its student accommodation system every 50 years. That's what is actually informing, you know, the approach. But the universities themselves are engaging and trying to find out what can work for them, what cannot work for them. Yes, as a structure, when you go to it, seeing it there, it's quite appealing. And we tried to knock around and try what is the sustainability of this structure, and we were told, what can you advise from the standpoint of you having this facility? No, this facility, it cannot be the backbone of the provision of student accommodation. It could only be a stopgap measure. That's what we got. How then Forte would go along with that? It's a matter that they have to consider for themselves. But we're supporting them quite extensively on student housing, including other institutions as well. Now, the objectives that have not been achieved, no, we're not rolling them over. We carry them through. We carry them through. And they are not an add-on on the predetermined objectives of that financial year. No, it's just an add-on. And in actual fact, you would pick up in some of them, there is some kind of alignment and integration as you go forward. The university that received a qualified audit opinion, unfortunately, it's Walter Sisulu University. My colleagues would actually get into other questions that were raised, but we received the comment and the suggestion quite positively, and looking forward that we are not going to disappoint each other.
Thank you, DG. Maybe to also just add to what DG was indicating around the employment of graduates, another process that we've been entering into is a one-on-one discussion with all the professional bodies. And what we're doing there is looking at ways in which we can deal with any blockages between graduation and registration and employment, and also setting up systems to track graduates to understand where they're getting employed. So we will get better information as we go along. I think DG discussed the issue of the mergers and also the issue of the stag quite well. In terms of the question around the foundation-based teacher education project, yes, the department is working, the Department of Basic Education. The Integrated Strategic Planning Framework was launched together with the Department of Basic Education and developed collaboratively. And the Strengthening Foundation-Based Teacher Education Program is part of that overall plan. Specifically, the Department of Higher Education is working, and every year we do a document called Trends in Teacher Education, where we try to understand exactly what kind of teachers are being produced by the system. That is, how many foundation phase, how many intermediate phase, how many senior phase, how many FET, and also related to specific subjects. We started that in 2009, and every year now we have engagements with the universities around this in order to try and move towards providing the kinds of teachers we need in a particular area. The foundation phase focus is very specific because that is an area where we have the most need, and it's why we're putting so much effort into that. In relation to this question around new childhood academics, childhood education is the sort of phrase that is being utilized in the system at the moment to incorporate both early childhood development for teachers of children from 0 to 4 years old, as well as the sort of grade R and the foundation phase. So it covers the entire spectrum from 0 to 9 year old children. So we're talking about developing academics who will work in teacher education to produce teachers for that whole range of young learners. In terms of the review of the funding of universities, the ministerial committee is due to report in November now. The draft report has already been developed. Once that has come in, that report has come in, then there will be a process, firstly for the minister to consider the report, consider the recommendations of the committee, and then we will be looking at how we start taking those recommendations forward into changing the actual funding framework as the minister, as directed by the minister. One of the things that we have started doing in the meantime, and this is specifically in relation to the concern of funding for some of our institutions around, for example, student housing issue and infrastructural backlogs, is to start utilizing earmark grants in more effective ways. And from that perspective, we've introduced criteria that will enable us to steer funding in ways that will be more equitable for the system as a whole. The issue of the one institution with the unqualified audit report, Gauteng Sisulu University, I think we need to emphasize that that's an improvement, because last year it was a disclaimer. So it is an improvement, and hopefully there will be a further improvement as we go forward. I think that, I'm just being reminded by my colleague that one of the things that has specifically been put in place in terms of the earmark funding is that a large proportion of the current funds for infrastructure is being directed towards historically disadvantaged universities, and that's specifically for student housing and for infrastructural backlogs. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. There are three questions for Program 4. The first question emanated from slide number 25, and that was in relation to the 826 lecturers that have been trained. Just need to indicate here that the training that has been referred to here is a support training and not the initial qualification for lecturers. And in relation to that training which was conducted, the training was facilitated by the Department of Higher Education and Training, and that was to support the curriculum delivery. So that training focused on the new curriculum and the revised curriculum. In relation to what the honourable member could have been alluding to, the issue of initial qualifications or qualifications for college lecturers, that was covered in the presentation by Program 3, and that was in slide 3, and that is the last bullet that was covered in relation to the initial qualifications for college lecturers. It is then that the lecturers will then have their training undertaken at universities. In relation to the question that was asked about the new primary health program as to whether all the colleges will be offering it, once a program is being developed, it is open for offer by any college, but there is a process for a college to offer, and they need to make an application to the department, and the department would have to approve that application. Because some of the things that would need to be considered would be the capacity of that college to be able to offer the program. Currently, in terms of this process which was undertaken in the plans for 2013, the indications are that 12 colleges will be offering the new program in primary health. And the last question was in relation to the certification and the deadline that was indicated for end of October, the readiness of the department to meet that deadline. Chairperson and honourable members, I'm happy to report that in relation to the Report 191, which is commonly known as the NATED programs, all the certificates for that program have been printed and issued and sent to the various examination centres. So that has been done in that regard. And I need to, though, also indicate that for the NCV, that target date will not be met, because we're still looking at the end of October. And the reason for that is that we are, as indicated previously in the presentation related to Program 4, there are challenges in relation to the State Information Technology Agency. And the challenges in that is currently their inability to provide error-free data, which Umalusi would then be able to use to do the certificates for the NCV programs. The current target date that has been indicated, having identified and indicated these challenges, Chairperson and members, I need to indicate that we are working daily with CETA to ensure that we are able to circumvent them. The new date that has been indicated as a target date in relation to the NCV certificates, therefore, is the 7th of December 2012. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chair, in a brief addition to the point that you made earlier, in his opening remarks, yes, the department did identify most of those red lights that have been reported about. it is part of the reason why the department had to effect amendments to the Basic Government Act to have standard constitution in order to strengthen those areas of government. When we realize that there is this Cavalier swashbuckling approach to the manner in which the business within CITES is being managed. But secondly, Chair, I also need to indicate that part of the work that is done in terms of the grant regulation, the amendments that were effecting on the grant regulation, is exactly meant to do that. Some of these shortcomings around supply chain, and so we're trying to strengthen the systems within CITES. So, yes, the department is aware, and the department is definitely interacting with CITES. But the point I think that we need to put across is the fact that CITES, in their own right, are accountable to the people. That is the reason why, on the 7th of November, we have Chieta coming to present his annual report here, and also report on his audit findings. And that will happen with all the other CITES. So in that sense, then, each of the CITES will be able to account to this House in terms of the pertinent issues that honorable members have raised around the performance of CITES. So in that sense, then, I need to say, let's put that matter to rest with that kind of a response. The NSF data, including the data around that is that is information that is available. And I promise Chairperson, by the Secretariat, you will get that information with the 79 project breaking down and in which instances it operates, and the artisan development data in respect of how does it spread out to all the 14 CITES, including in China. That information will be shared with the House as the President.
Now we'll
so check this strat plan.
Oh, okay.
Honorable member, the strat plans of 2011-2012 were signed off. They were finalized and signed off by the minister. The ones that are outstanding are the 2013-2014 ones, which is, I'm sorry, 2012-2013, which
and
are the current.
And they are going to attract an audit query.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Chair.
Now let's
look at the question. There's something I didn't quite get from the President over there about the accountability of the CITES. It says they are accountable to somebody else, not to the department. Is that what I'm hearing? Because my argument, according to your presentation, you are responsible for the coordination of the CITES. What would that mean? What are you coordinating? They are functioning. What is it that you are coordinating if their performance is as dismal as it has been reported by the AG? In fact, from the chair there, his argument is because of the perennial dysfunctioning of these CITES, do we still have reasons for these CITES to exist? What are your views? Or we're saying, let us wait for that other organ that will come and report to us, then we'll come back to you, to the department. Is that what you are saying? And also, lastly, the foundation says, would you have some statistical information on the numbers that we have produced and that we have invested producing? We'll gladly welcome that one. Thank you.
It's safe to say that maybe Clark may not be confident to reflect about the necessity for the continuance of the CITES, or otherwise it's a ministerial function. Maybe the DG might express a view because he is interacting closely with the minister. Let me allow Professor Trees to ask a question, and then the members, and then
thank you, Chair. Just also in relation to the certificates,
but this is now in relation to certificates outstanding from CETA's side. I would just like to know whether the department has any process in place to deal with this, because in a reply to a parliamentary question it was said that the main problem is that many of these companies no longer exist, but surely the department must have some plan in place, because many of these learners have paid lots and lots of money, and they do have a case that they are entitled to a certificate, because many of them in fact do have their results. So it's just a question of issuing a certificate.
Job evaluation was not answered. I wish I were in the public administration to reflect on issues of job evaluation, because when you create a post, you must do that sort of analysis in first, that's the first requirement. And the subsequent one is when maybe there are added responsibilities. You know, you reevaluate whether indeed don't you think the, or reduce the responsibilities, whether these duties might need a new job or increased salary and all that. But anyway, let's answer.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question was on why are we not doing job evaluation in the department. On page 355 of the report, we have given statistics in respect to the number of posts that were evaluated in 2011 and 12. We did conduct job evaluation on 7 posts. But I want to say, Ed, that we also, in addition to 7, evaluated 46 posts for the 2PTO, but it's not reported in the document. Now, Chairperson, job evaluation is done on a number of reasons. One, there could be a request from the staff member himself for a cess, or from the union rep, or even from the supervisor. So HR will act on the basis of the request that has been forwarded. But secondly, job evaluation is done on a newly created post. We are compelled in terms of the regulations to conduct job evaluation. And I do want to say that in respect to, for instance, the newly approved macro structure, we have evaluated a number of the senior posts in that regard, and that is what is going to inform the final structure of the department. But if you look at the report, the total number of posts that were upgraded in 2011 and 12 is 21, which exceeds the number of posts that were evaluated. And the difference is that in terms of the collective agreement, number one of 2009, some of those posts had to be upgraded. So they were not based on the job evaluation itself. Yeah. Then there is a question on Indlela cases. I think there was a concern that was raised on the fact that the department has not moved. I do want to just update the committee chairperson on that one. As you remember, 25 officials were indicated by the audit report. But the department had to be very cautious so as to ensure that the operations of Indlela are not adversely affected, because that number constituted quite a substantial number of the staff establishment of Indlela itself. Letters of intent were issued to all 25 officials by the Director General in respect to them making a representation why he should not charge them for misconduct. And that was followed by a process, an elaborate process with the auditors themselves, because we had to establish the nature of the charges were to be preferred on these officials. Chairperson, I do want to give an update that one of the officials there was taken through the processes and the sanction was a dismissal. However, he had to appeal to the minister, but the appeal process has also been finalized, which confirms the dismissal. We also charged 5 officials in addition to that one, and we have now received 3 sanctions out of those 5. One is a dismissal, the second one is a demotion, and then the third one, the sanction is a suspension of a salary for 1 month. I do want to say, Chairperson, that one of the challenges that the officers are having is that some of the staff members are cleaners and security guards, and it does become a challenge to justify a charge on financial misconduct on a cleaner, because this was some kind of an operation which involved some key officials that are, you know, in positions that they could make financial decisions, but others were really just used in the process. However, the plan of the department is to proceed with the remainder. But I do want to say 8 of them were actually witnesses in the case of the 6 whose sanctions have now been have since been finalized. The process is continuing, Chairperson. I do want to say that we are also reliant on the use of officials from other government departments, which then makes the process a little bit slower on the part of the department. But there is commitment to finalize this process before the end of the financial year. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair. I think that's part of the problem on a system that's intended to rely more on the private providers, because then immediately disappear with those records, you are unable to begin to keep track of that. But hearing that, I think the department is working with the CITAS to try to remedy the situation. There is a plan in place. DG has appointed a group of officials from the department who are dedicated to deal with this matter. For instance, Mary CITA was able to produce records to demonstrate that they have records for those learners that they have to certificate. And Mary CITA now, so to speak, don't have any of the certificates that has been cleared. So that process then is going to be dealt with. Thank you.
Hello, Maxwell. Just very quick ones. I'm not going to elaborate, just raise issues and not respond. The first is the verification of qualifications. Why is it taking, or what are the complaints there or challenges in that regard? Because it does, in terms of the report, show that there are issues. The other is access to the personal system. My colleagues, when we're doing oversight, the complaint was that they are not able to fill those positions with speed and so on and so on. That whole process, and why are there difficulties in allowing them to move other than just their own college positions or vacant posts and so on, so that we quicken them. The last is RPL1. I know that there's some task team, whether it's a task team or whatever they are called, that team that the minister has put in place to try and deal with. By the way, when is it reporting on their work? I think we eagerly waiting for their recommendations as to how should this be implemented, because it has quite been some time, and this policy seems to have difficulty in terms of the implementation.
Chair, mine is the commercial, if you allow me. It's not a question. In my constituency, I was pleasantly surprised with a project, a program by an NGO, which is ZRM Education Trust. I'm talking about a constituency in Middleton. They are invited by schools, a group of 10 schools, and they train teachers how to train these ones how to read and write. And the teachers of that area were so excited about the results and how this particular individual has helped them. So much so that on the 30th of this month, the 10 schools will be competing on this writing and reading. When I saw that, how I wished, how that system could be something that is happening throughout the country. So our teachers are taught the best way how to teach the little ones. I'm throwing that more as a commercial to say, if the department could be in a position to send somebody on the 10th of this month at Debenham, just to see how an individual after 3 years has been in a position to change the way to teach learning and reading. Yes.
In Parliament nowadays, when public works reports, I see people running to the venue, and you are telling us here that you've got a project with public works. Now we are beginning to also think very curiously about how they are involved in that project, and you know, we are flagging it today. We hear that the security system at public works. We are flagging it because there are problems in public works that the minister has spoken about, the deputy minister of public has spoken about, and all that. And where it affects our department, we are starting to begin to want to hear more about what is happening there, because there are all these allegations and so on, and we in this group don't like allegations for that matter, or understanding. We don't do so. We would like to really make sure that things are properly processed. We don't want to see the public projector chasing life on the issue of the in-line security system. So let's get something also from the CFO on this coordination issue. What amount, what is involved, who did what, why? We need to hear. This is our issue. We want to resolve it.
In terms of the matter around condonations, irregular expenditure is only condoned by the accounting authority, which is the DG in our case, and the councils in the case of public entities. Where condonation must come to Parliament or to SCOPA is where there were unauthorized expenditure items. And that is where you overspent in terms of your vote, or if you overspend in terms of a program in the vote, and where you do not spend in terms of the aim of the vote as it is published in the budget or in the EME. And that's where Parliament comes in. So in terms of the normal condemnation rules published by National Treasury, we dealt with those expenditure items in terms of irregular expenditure with the accounting authority.
What happened? That's the purpose. What do you hear? What did the DG now say it was fine? That's what we want to hear as Parliament.
Sure. Chair, what we can do is to provide you with all the evidence to make it sure it's a substantial document, what was condoned by the DG and the details around those transactions. We can provide you with a copy of that.
RPN DG.
No, thank you very much. Let me start with the RPN. No, this is the system which is close at our heart, basically. Hence the commission of this study, so that we are able to institutionalize the recognition of prior learning, you know, in the system, you know, as a whole. The task team requested an extension on the previous indicated date, and they approached the ministry and requested the extension up to the end of November, with the possibility that they can finalize everything before the end of November. But they have been given that latitude until the end of November. And from there, in actual fact, it's a report that we'll be sharing with the portfolio committee and the public, you know, as a whole. Because it's going to be subjected to public engagement, amongst other things, not just for the department. Now, on the CETA certification, one of the things that we're doing in the work with the CETA is also to establish as to whether there have been payments that were made by the CETA to these training providers. And if payments were made, how could that be if there is no completion of the program in terms of the certification? It's one another thing that we are looking at with a view where we find that the money that was spent inappropriately, prosecution should actually take place unapologetically amongst other things. The need for the existence of the CETA, that's not our competence. We are here for predetermined objectives, amongst of which is the performance of the CETA. But in regard to addressing the anomalies that were picked up in the system, over and above the day-to-day running battles that we're having with the CETA, the development of sector skills plans, track plans, are the areas that we are taking quite seriously as a department and putting mechanisms in place in ensuring that in the process of doing so, we interact with the entire system. Because it doesn't make a sector to say it has got a sector skills plan, but the universities in the surrounding, they do not know that, what it actually means. The skills that are required, where are they going to come from? They will be coming from these institutions. So there is that kind of robust work that we are doing. And also engaging quite robustly our counterparts, that is the CEOs and managers, in as much as they feel that we are encroaching in their territory, but they are running battles in that regard. To have your support is really encouraging us. So thank you very much, Chair.
CFO, we hear that the internal audit unit, if it exists, did not report as required by the law. Let's see. What are the problems there?
There were reports. I think the one aspect specifically that the IG referred to, and that has been corrected this year, is based on the quarterly performance information that's reported. There was not a review done by internal audit, only in the last two quarters. The first two quarters, partly based on capacity constraints within our internal audit units, we did not correct that yet at that point in time. For the current financial year, things are in place, and the reports take place as required. I also report to the audit committee in that respect at the moment.
We have reflected on the work of the department, and the Deputy Minister was listening to the presentations and the engagements by the committee members. Can I allow you an opportunity to summarize on behalf of your department, and thereafter we lead to our closure?
Well, thank you very much, Chair, colleagues. Chair, well, we note the reflections made by the Auditor General and the committee members. And though we believe we've made great strides in achieving some or rather most of the set targets and objectives, but we do realize that through these processes and engagements, more work still needs to be done our side, Chair, we take wisdom and guidance from the committee to go back and improve on all the loopholes and challenges that have been identified by the committee members and also lifted by the Auditor General. Overall, thank you very much for this opportunity. We'll go and tighten the loose ends. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Let me take this opportunity to thank the Office of the Auditor General for their presentation. It has helped the committee to interrogate the report of the department much better. I guess the DDG for Corporate Services will make a confirmation to us as to when we will receive those policies signed by the minister that were said to have been produced by the department. It's very important because we are developing a portfolio of evidence. In our report, in fact, by Thursday, if we don't have that, I wouldn't say there are policies. Because on any aspect on which there's not been a portfolio of evidence, our report, we're going to strike out. We need a very clear report to Parliament. We can't report on things we don't know to Parliament. I mean, it follows us. You have said that we've got good policies and we need to see them and we're happy for that. And please make sure that that is presented to our committee secretary. And let me thank also members for their contributions. And tomorrow we have a meeting to adopt clause by clause the bill that has been referred to us by the department. The venue is E249. We'll start at 14 hours in the afternoon. It's going to be in the afternoon. And attendance is compulsory. The only thing that we accept is when a person has been taken by a stretcher into an ambulance to hospital. Other political commitments are not allowed. It's close by close. Political organizations must advise their members to be present because we must finalize this bill. Thank you very much for your contributions. The meeting is adjourned.